All right, this is Steeler Country. I'm your host, Tony, alongside my two co-hosts, Mike and Joe. Mike is back this week. The full team is here. So, guys, let's talk Steelers. It's been a couple weeks since we've played a game, but there's still a lot to talk about when it comes to the season. We will be doing our MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Joe's favorite category, Most Improved Player. But I want to start this podcast by talking about the season as a whole, and you know, I have some questions for you guys about, you know, what do you think about certain aspects of the season. You know, one of the things, Joe, you and I talked about last week on the podcast was this renewed emphasis that the Steelers had this year on protecting Ben Roethlisberger, right? The first two draft picks are offensive linemen. They bring in Todd Haley, who brings in this renewed emphasis on the running game and short passes and getting the ball out of Ben Roethlisberger's hands. And yet Ben Roethlisberger still goes down with injury middle of the season, misses some games, and then really isn't healthy for the rest of the season. So, Joe, I'll go to you first on this. Was the Todd Haley offense, was the renewed emphasis on protecting Ben Roethlisberger, was it a failure?
No, absolutely not. And I mean, look, it was working early. Injuries are going to happen. So, you know, is it the renewed emphasis on fundamental football, running the ball, protecting the quarterback, owning the line of scrimmage on the offensive side of the ball, is that a winning strategy? Yes. Yes. Is it a winning strategy in terms of winning football games? Yes. And is it a winning strategy in terms of keeping your fans interested? And they kind of go hand in hand, but the diehard Steeler fans, of which I'm proud to say I'm one, that's the kind of football we want to see. And so, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. So, yeah, I'm glad for it. I hope they don't abandon it. I hope they stick with it because I think it's a strategy that pays off in the long run.
Mike, what do you think?
How's it going, guys? It's good to be back here talking Steelers even during this playoff run that we're not in. I think the offensive line did improve, and they, you know, made the emphasis to try to protect Ben. I don't think it matters what kind of offensive line you put in front of Ben. He's going to end up getting hurt, maybe, or at least put himself out there with the possibility of getting hurt just by the way he plays.
He's certainly going to get hit.
Yes, there you go. He's going to get hit. He's going to have guys hanging off him, and he's going to make plays. So I agree with Joe. I don't think it was a failure. I think it was a step in the right direction. And, you know, with all the talk about what the offensive line may be next year, at least the starters, I mean, it's a little promising. So young guys coming into their own, I think that they just need to look at getting some depth too.
Yeah. You know, I look back – a lot of people have looked back now at this Steelers season, especially former Steelers, Jerome Bettis, Hines Ward, Matt Spaeth, out of, you know, who's on the Chicago Bears right now. You know, talking about what went wrong with the Steelers this year. And I think that the consensus has become that it was a mistake. Not necessarily the wrong move, but a mistake to remove Bruce Arians as the offensive coordinator. Obviously, we all think it's an upgrade to go to Todd Haley. But given the results, given what we're dealing with now, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? Was it a mistake to get rid of? I guess we know that we're all going to say no to that. But what do you think about that idea? You know, the idea that this season could have turned out better if Bruce Arians was still the offensive coordinator. Is there any truth to that, Joe?
Well, it's. I have to tell you that this line of thinking is it's so annoying to me because. You know, I know where it comes from. It's like, well, we were 12-4, you know, the year before last with Bruce Arians, and now we're only 8-8. Well, you know, I mean, look, we went to a Super Bowl, came back 9-7 the following year.
Yep.
This idea of a, you know, of a high flying offense. Look, the look at the Packers from one year to the next, right? Look at the Saints from one year to the next. Look at the freaking vaunted New England Patriots from one year to the next. You know, these teams that rely on this synchronized you know, offense, this big chunks idea, your winning games comes down to just a few plays rather than repeated execution of a proven formula that can't be stopped, that's just going to win, you know, 14 times out of 16 times over and over and over again. You can't do that with a big chunks offense. And the Steelers' five seasons under Bruce Arians proved it. I understand we went to a Super Bowl. You have to have a championship caliber quarterback to make it to a Super Bowl. I get that. Okay. And we have that in Ben Roethlisberger. But you can go to repeated Super Bowls if you harness the ability of that quarterback and put it into a proven system to constantly pound a defense and then put it on its heels and drive a stake through its heart with the long pass and with the medium passes, rather than coming out throwing a damn ball all over the place and getting yourself in trouble.
But game plan wise, obviously we don't like Bruce Arians' game plan, right?
No, it was not a mistake. I answered your question and then I said why.
Let's talk about the person, right? Because I mean, if you could get Bruce Arians to change game plan, that wasn't tried. It wasn't as though Bruce Arians was said, you know, was told by Tomlin or anyone, hey, let's work in whatever you're doing with some more runs or some more short passes or let's just tweak the way it's going now. Right? It's not necessarily broken, but we're not getting the best out of this offense. We're getting the most out of the offense. Do we, you know, there was no emphasis on like, hey, let's begin. It's just, hey, you know, you got to go. And I guess that's where, Mike, what do you think? This season was a disappointment, I think, to a lot of us, even though going in, I don't know how much expectation we really had, but, how much of that do you put on that, the firing of Bruce Arians as a result, or ending up in this result?
I think it was a factor early with the offense, as we pointed out, that they had trouble getting going a little bit, and then they found their groove with the new offense, and then down the stretch, for whatever reason, it didn't work, and maybe Ben wasn't healthy, or maybe teams started picking up on the dink and dunk. So now, if you had Arians in there the whole time and you're wide open throwing the ball, sure, I think we would have won a few more games early and maybe a few more games late and maybe been 10-6 or 11-5. Or maybe Ben would have been hurt for more games. You know, maybe we would have had more offensive linemen hurt too in that, or wide receivers hurt in that high-flying offense. I don't know. I think a balanced offense, running game, protect your quarterback type, you know, third and shorts, seems to be, I want to say it's the better way to go. I can't say I can prove it based on the teams left this season and like that. But it just seems like in the long run, that's the better approach. Sure, the high-flying offense might win you more games and get you into the playoffs and maybe even win a playoff game, but is it going to get you that Super Bowl championship? I mean, I know we won it, like you said, in 2008 and in 2010 we got there, but was it because of the high-flying offense? I don't think it was.
No, I mean it was certainly in 2008 it was in spite of that offense and the interesting thing to me about the Bruce Arians tenure and looking back at it now, and I, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20 on this stuff. No one at the time when Bruce Arians got fired, I mean, other than Ben Roethlisberger, was really questioning it. I think a lot of people understood why that change was made. Clearly, the Steelers had gotten away from doing what is expected of a Steeler offense. And you know, even though – look, we're moving towards – it's a passing league, and everybody knows that. And you have to have a great quarterback to win a Super Bowl, right? There hasn't been a bad quarterback to win a Super Bowl since, you know, Brad Johnson or Trent Dilfer. And those guys weren't bad quarterbacks. They just were adequate. So you bring in a guy like Todd Haley to change up the offense. But I would say that at this point, I would say it was a mistake to fire Bruce Arians. And I guess, you're not going to have Ben Roethlisberger forever, right? We can all take Ben Roethlisberger for granted and say, you know, well, you know, we have this great quarterback. We just need to harness that talent with whoever it can be. But the ripple effect of firing Bruce Arians, we're still going to deal with that going into next season. You know, we got through year one. It went well at times. It went bad at times. We're going to have another offseason to fix that. But the problems with the offense are not so much schemes or personnel. It's the people. It's the people getting along. It's the relationship is the problem. And that's not Steeler football. You know, that is not Steeler football. So that's my, you know, that's my thing. If we wanted to, if you want to go to a short passing game or running the ball or whatever you want to do, in hindsight, to me, you probably would have been better off just altering what Bruce Arians was already doing. And even if you wanted to let go of Bruce Arians to send a message or whatever, bringing in a guy who was outside of the system and was going to install a new system, clearly at this point, it was a mistake to me. So, you know, going forward, we'll see what happens next season. But
that sure is hindsight, man. You wanted Arians fired so bad.
I know. Oh,
last
listen.
Last year.
I know. And it's –
Well, you were on the let's get rid of Arians in 2008.
Right.
You got on that way before Mike or I did. And I'm not going to say that it was a mistake.
They had to go in another direction. Let me ask you this.
When would it? Okay, if we go 7-9 or 8-8 or 9-7 again next year, right, and have the same sort of problems with the offense just being, you know, inconsistent.
Look, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. So I think that we're saying, or at least I'll say it, I'm saying the answer, Arians wasn't the answer. So just because you pick something else and that's not the answer either doesn't mean that it was a mistake to try to pick something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think none of us have a real problem with Todd Haley's game plan itself, right? I mean, that seemed to work, you know, for a good chunk of the season. And then it, you know, it didn't just fall apart at the end of the season. I mean, it all came crumbling down, right? I mean,
I'm gonna say that, you know, one season, you know, you're not gonna build, you know, Rome in one season. So I want to see now what's phase two. Okay, what is next year gonna be? Are we gonna build on the ball control? Are we gonna build on the ability to run the ball? Are we going to build on the ability to control the line of scrimmage? What is it that we're going to do next? What's the next move?
I sure as hell hope
it's not move back, move away, take a step back. Oh, sorry, we upset some of the prima donnas in the universe, and now we're going to try to make nice with them.
Well, I don't want that. Right. Well, clearly that's not going to happen because the way that you would go about that, right, would be to fire Todd Haley. We know Todd Haley's not getting let go. Now, he may get that job in Arizona. That's still up in the air as of recording this. We're doing this on Monday night. But we know that's not happening. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where the Steelers go in the draft. I think they have a lot of possibilities there. You know, I mean, do you take a running back in the first round? I mean, clearly value is going to dictate where the Steelers go with that pick if there's a running back that they feel like it's worth a first-round pick. If you don't go running back, do you still stay on the offensive side? Maybe you go wide receiver to replace Mike Wallace. Should he go? You go offensive line again for the what would be like the third offensive lineman taken in the last, I guess it was two last year and then we won next year. But or do you go defense? Or do you go to the defensive side of the ball? What's interesting about coming out of this season is I think we were all kind of worried about what was going to happen with that defense, with the turnover on that defense, losing Ferrier, losing Smith, and then losing William Gay. Now you have Keenan Lewis coming in there. And ultimately, where the Steelers have always succeeded, which is defense, that came through again. And I look at the defense now and I think there's just young stars ready to blossom all over that defense. I don't know how you guys feel.
I agree with you. I mean, that you know, the defense was good, and we got young guys coming up like Keenan Lewis and Cortez Allen, and you know, young guys on the line maybe haven't stepped up the way we'd like them to. And then with what's his name, Spence coming
back?
Yeah,
Sean Spence, yeah.
And so hopefully he does something. And then World's coming up. So there's definitely young guys coming up. And they were number one in yards per game. They weren't number one in points per game. And they were very bad in takeaways for the second straight year. I think that's a problem. And takeaways start with pass rush, basically, or pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I want to get your take on that because, you know, that's one thing we talked about last week. You know, Rooney has this yearly press conference now where, you know, he basically goes through, talks to the media about the season and what he, you know, what he sees the future of the Steelers as. And last year, he talked a lot during his press conference about we have to protect Ben Roethlisberger. That's going to be the focus going into next season. And then we you know, we got rid of Arians. We got two offensive linemen. We went to the short passing game, renewed running game. You know, all that happened, right? Right after Rooney said that. So this year, Rooney's big thing was we've got to fix the turnover situation. And that starts with getting pressure on the quarterback. You know, Joe and I talked about last week as far as the defense goes. You know, yeah, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback is a problem for the Steelers right now. But I don't know that that's what caused us to be 8-8, and I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I don't know if that's what causes being 8-8, but with the number one defense, it just seems like it wasn't good enough, though. I mean, it didn't seem like a number one defense. It seemed like they were good.
Mm-hmm.
But and I think it comes down to the takeaways. They only had 20 takeaways, and I think that the team that led the league was who the – let me look it up.
I think it was the 49ers, but I'm gonna
Chicago 44.
Oh, Chicago.
I mean, that's a big difference, 44-20.
Yeah.
And takeaways. And
well,
so,
we were bottom of the league again, right? I mean, I think we were.
We were like 10th in the AFC, yeah. Which is probably somewhere in the 20-25 range.
Yeah.
So that's that just needs to be improved. Sometimes we'd say it's just luck, these takeaways and giveaways, but it's not. So, I mean, you don't win. I mean, maybe you need that luck. You need to create luck for yourself sometimes.
Yeah. On that same thought process, right? We've got James Harrison. We've got Lamar Woodley. We've got Jason Worlds. We got Chris Carter. Got a lot of young guys there. No one yet has really taken the leap, right? I don't think anyone's ready to buy a Jason Worlds jersey just yet. You know, when Harrison was coming up, when Woodley was coming up, when they were on the field, you felt their impact. Same thing with Timmons, right? Those three guys, those were three impact players that you knew when they got on the field, they weren't starting it, but when they got on the field, they made plays. You know, do you feel like pass rusher is going to be a big emphasis for the Steelers in this offseason, or should it be a big emphasis for the Steelers in this offseason? Or do you want to give more time to Worlds and the other young guys?
I don't know what I think about it, but my opinion about what the Steelers are going to do is they are going to address that head on.
Yeah.
This year, yeah, because it's 2 years in a row and it's very obvious, and it's got to be pretty frustrating, you know, for coaches and for management. You know, to see this terrific defense that you know, look, if you're number one defense in terms of yards, right, and your offense is giving away the ball, and you're not getting turnovers, you're not getting off the field because you turn the ball over, you're making stops, you're not giving up plays. That's how you get off the field. That's the only way you can produce that kind of a number one yardage number. Is by stopping the other team, by just stifling them. And that's what the Steelers did. So that's got to be really frustrating for them that, look, we can, you know, we have all this talent, you know, in the secondary, and then we're lacking up front. That's got to be very frustrating for them. Because imagine how good that secondary is behind a defensive line that upsets your blocking scheme, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then linebackers that can either stifle the run or put tremendous pressure on the quarterback. One thing I will be a little critical of the Steelers on in this whole hey, we're not creating turnovers because we're not creating pressure. You know, years in the Rod Woodson, Carnell Lake days, the Steelers did a lot of safety blitzes, a lot. We never see that anymore for at least two seasons.
Well, but how much that has to do with Polamalu being injured, though, right? I mean, I think
maybe, but I mean, come on. Okay, so one guy goes out, now we can't do blitz anymore.
But Joe's point, I mean, we did it without back then. Polamalu wasn't on the team.
No, but you're not going to blitz Clark, right? Because he's just not a speedy guy like that.
Why aren't we blitzing Keenan Lewis and Cortez Allen and Ike Taylor?
Yeah. I agree. No, I agree with you. I think, yeah. I mean,
they do sometimes. We've seen some of that, but
not as much
like we used to.
No, certainly not as much. I mean, they certainly rely on Harrison and Woodley to get pressure. And then, you know, I mean, they'll bring that, you know, of course, everyone loves talking about that twist blitz that the linebackers do. You know, the two inside guys, Foot and Timmons.
You know, it's like they pick up a lot of times those blitzes get picked up
easily.
And it's because it's repetitive.
Yeah.
Right. The safety blitz and the corner blitz are two blitzes that just add more confusion, more things for those offensive linemen to prepare for all week, to be wondering about in their heads, for the quarterback to be looking at, trying to decide now, is this going to be a safety, corner, linebacker, what twist,
exactly. What
kind of blitz is coming, and I got to pick. This way it's like, oh, where's Harrison, where's Woodley, I got nothing to worry about.
If you do that corner blitz or safety blitz four times a game, you know, what's happening on the other eight or nine third downs when they don't blitz? Meaning, like, the quarterback's back there, and they're not sure, just like you said. They're not sure if they're coming or not. Because they do it often. So that's got to get in his head too.
Well, okay, I'll say this though. I don't disagree with you guys. I think corner blitzing and all that stuff is, you know, is key to getting pressure on the quarterback, especially when we thought Lamar Woodley was going to be a dominant pass rusher, a guy who, you know, even if the offensive lineman's keying on him, he could still get pressure on the quarterback or freeing up other guys to get pressure. That hasn't happened in you know, a year and a half now, basically since he had that hamstring injury middle of last season. But, you know, you talk about we haven't seen a lot of pressure in the past 2 years or a lot of safety blitzes or a lot of using the secondary in that way. I think that has to do with the fact that the Steelers got beat by Aaron Rodgers in the Super Bowl and it wasn't pretty. You know, he basically picked us apart, and LeBeau has basically tailored the offense since then to beat those elite quarterbacks, right? To go after the Bradys, the Mannings, the Breeze, all those guys. And you look at the way that Ike Taylor and Keenan Lewis and Clark and, you know, and Will Allen when he was in there, right? Even Cortez Allen, all those guys play against those top ranked offenses. You know, they're able to shut guys down. They're able to shut teams down. Yeah, we're not getting pressure, but like you said, Joe, you know, we're getting stops, right?
Right, we get stops. And I listen, it's commendable, man. It is amazing what's taken place in a couple of seasons, really, in terms of being able to stop. I mean, really and truly, the Steelers' defense has nothing to fear against those quarterbacks. But I don't know that means that you have to do that exclusively. I understand those quarterbacks come out, they're prepared. They prepare all week for the blitz. Right, that's what they're ready to take it on, and then they execute against it flawlessly. So you cannot fault, and I'm not going to sit here and fault the Steelers, for not blitzing Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady.
I think in those instances, you know, you watch the games that we watched yesterday, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers. I think the Aaron Rodgers thing is a great comparison to, you know, right now, because he just lost to San Francisco in a game in which they were able to get pressure on him, but they weren't bringing corners and safeties, right? They were able to do it with their front four. They have a dominant front four. And then if they wanted to bring a linebacker here and there, they certainly did that. But I think you're right, Joe. I think when you bring the corner off the edge, right? I mean, you're not going to fool Tom Brady bringing a corner off the edge. He's going to burn that.
It's gimmicky, but I just don't think you do it sometimes just to keep them off balance, and sure, you're going to get burned by it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you can pick your opponent too. I mean, you don't have to do it against the guy that knows what to do about it.
Right.
But why can't we corner blitz Joe Flacco, for God's sake?
Or Andy Dalton.
Yeah, or Andy Dalton, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that, you know,
or Tony Romo.
My problem with the emphasis on the defense, even though it is right and it would improve the team overall if we got a better pass rush, it would improve the turnover ratio and all that. I don't know that that's what this team needs in order to I don't want to say turn the corner, because it's not like we're a bad team or anything, but you know, in order to get us back where we need to be, right?
To be in a playoff run.
Yeah, to make a playoff run.
Where these four teams are this week. So what is it?
We should have been making a playoff run this year. Granted, the team played like crap the second half of the season, but it didn't have to.
Right.
You know, I mean, it just went off a cliff mentally on the offensive side of the ball.
I think two things have to take place in order for this thing to move forward. You have to get rid of the cancers in the locker room, and I mean Rashard Mendenhall, Mike Wallace, and then Chris Rainey, who we got rid of, and now it's coming out now that this was not his first run-in with the law while in Pittsburgh. So
yeah, when I first heard it, I kind of felt bad that, you know, man, this guy screws up one time and they cut him, and you know the Steelers are showing no tolerance, blah blah blah. But then when you read into the story, he basically, you know, he was basically playing on, what would you call it, you know, he was on his last straw already. We just didn't know.
Yeah.
And they did the right thing.
Yeah, you have to get rid of those guys first of all. And then you have to figure out a way to make the Ben and Haley thing work. And you have a whole offseason to do that. And then, you know, you have to solidify the running back position. I love the fact that this team is going to go into next season with an offensive line that every Steeler fan can be excited about. You know, it's all young guys. It's not, you know, well, what happens with this, if this guy, you know, guy gets hurt, or, you know, this guy's injury prone, that kind of thing. You know, you're going into a season now where all five guys are all pros, basically. I mean, or capable of being all pros.
Can you name the five? We have five young guys that should start, and then I think there's even a sixth guy. Can you name him?
Yeah. So starting from the left side to the right side, you're going to probably end up next season with Mike Adams on the left side, at left tackle, left guard. Right now is Willie Colon. You know, we have a lot of guys who can transition around. You have Beecham, you have Ramon Foster, you have Doug Ligurski. Those are, you know, any of those guys could start at that position. And I think, you know, obviously that'll be a training camp battle.
But the youngest was finished because of his injury?
No, but he's finished because he makes too much money.
Yeah, and so the youngest, most promising guy is Beecham, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, he played really well at right tackle. So, you know, we have a lot of these utility guys that can play. You know, Foster can play guard or tackle. Ligurski can play center or guard. Beecham can play guard or tackle. You know, those are the kind of guys that Tomlin really likes. So one of those guys will end up at the left guard position. Centers, of course, Pouncey. Right guard, David DeCastro, the rookie who only played a couple games this year after getting injured in the preseason. And then Marcus Gilbert, who got injured midseason and then you know, got put on IR later in the season. So, I mean, and all of those guys I just talked about, you know, I don't think any of them have more than 4 years experience. Maybe Ramon Foster. I'll have to look up, you know, how long Ramon Foster has been in the league. But if he ends up being the starter, he would be the oldest guy. And he's not been, you know.
So we named seven guys there, with Ligurski being the older utility guy.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. So you got six younger type guys to play five positions. And, you know, maybe pick up one or two more guys, whether it be the draft or a free agency. And I don't know about Max Starks. Is he done, or is he going to hang around? Is he a utility guy?
He's probably done because the Steelers, I mean, you know, you can't, where are you going to fit him in? I mean, if you got Beecham and Ligurski and...
I mean, will he be a backup? You know, I'll just wait for a guy to get hurt and put me in and I'll help the team?
I would say if he's too old for that. I mean, it's certainly going to cost too much money. I think if Gilbert were to get hurt again and you have to go on IR early in the season, then I think that's when you'd see Max Starks get picked up again. But that's one thing that has to get worked out, right? Or the offensive line is worked out. That's fine.
But that looks promising.
That looks promising. Right. Quarterback, we know we're solid at quarterback. The tight end is a travesty when you look at what happened to Heath Miller. I mean, having the best season of his career and then, you know, blows out his knee in the last week.
Even if he comes back healthy, they need to get a second guy that could just, and maybe Paulson.
Yeah, David Paulson they liked. They liked Wesley Saunders. I don't know if Wesley Saunders is still on the team. There's Jamie McCoy. I mean, they brought in a lot of tight ends, but I don't. None of them are of his on his level. No. Yeah. Okay, so that's one. Okay, so those. Okay, so tight end. You know, we'll see what happens with tight end. You have to solidify the running back position. To me, you have to figure out who's the starter there. You can't do this running back by committee or the three man rotation thing. And I think Mendenhall's attitude certainly played into that whole rotation this year. So you got to figure out what that is. If you got to draft somebody, you got to pick up somebody in free agency, or you feel like, you know, either Redmond or Dwyer is your guy going forward. You got to commit to that and you got to go with it. Solidifying that. And then at the wide receiver spot, you know, we got to see, you know, these guys who we think have all this potential, Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders, we got to see it on the field. I mean, I thought Antonio Brown had a pretty good year. He was hurt for some of the season, but you know, got to see Emmanuel Sanders come out of his shell now and really emerge as a threat at wide receiver. And
then I think you undervalue Cotchery. Cotchery, every time I see him, he plays well.
Oh no, I mean for the two starters. I mean, those are the two.
Why can't Cotchery be a starter?
You would want him to start over Sanders?
I'm not saying he has to. I'm saying you're telling me, Sanders not really stepping up, you know?
I'm saying given his new role here, Sanders being put in a starting position, I mean, he's going to have a chance now to take that next step. You know, much in the same way that we knew Wallace was a good wide receiver his rookie year. He was making third down catches, doing a lot of things. But then when he got given that starting role opposite of Hines Ward, that's when you saw him go to another level. That's what we need to see Emmanuel Sanders do next year. I think Cotchery can be a great number three, and I think you probably want to think about bringing back Plaxico Burress, depending on what you do in the draft or in free agency.
I think they got to get somebody in the draft. I think third or fourth round, somewhere in there. And I like Sanders. Actually, I was disappointed in Sanders this year because he was the third receiver. That's the forgotten guy, and he's really good. And so he should have had a lot of wide open catches and big catch and runs, and he didn't have enough of them. He had a few.
Well, he had a lot of big play potential, but he dropped the ball a little too many times this year. And I mean, obviously, we're all going to remember that play in Baltimore. And even though we won that game, I mean, he had basically a touchdown, a sure thing touchdown. He just fumbled it away.
That's when he fumbled it. It was Baltimore. I was going to say that, and that was the type of play that could really give you a lot of confidence and lift you, just a long catch, you know, catch and run touchdown.
Yep.
But it didn't happen. So now to move him as a starter, it's more difficult to get open. And so I am a little worried about that next year.
Well, he's got to come into next season with the same attitude that Dwyer had coming into this season, which is, I want this. I have to earn this. We're probably going to take a wide receiver. I think there will be someone to challenge Sanders. Maybe not this year, but certainly down, you know, someone that we're going to bring into for his role down the road.
You're so right. If he comes in with a chip on his shoulder to prove himself, to prove that he can be a starter.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And I think he can. I mean, he's a good receiver.
Yep. And then, you know, so if you solidify the running back position and you can get some consistent play from your wide receivers, offensively, I mean, I feel like this thing should go next year. You know, a lot of the problem this year was a lot of the discontent that you had on offense, whether it be Ben, you know, his feelings about Arians, or Wallace, you know, just not being focused on being a Steeler after holding out for the entire training camp, or Mendenhall and his whole situation. If you can remove that stuff going into next season, and then solidify those positions, you know, this can be finally the offense we've all talked about for, what, 6 years on this podcast. It's taken a little while. But, you know, the good thing about this offense is that the offensive line is there, right? The core, the foundation of the team is there. If they can stay healthy, that makes everything else, you know, that makes everything else a lot easier.
Oh, you need to put a top 10 or top 5 caliber running back behind them. If you do that, and that could be Dwyer. I'm not going to just say, no way, Dwyer can't be that guy. He has not been that guy up to now. I like the way he plays. I like the way he runs hard. Who couldn't? I mean, you have to admire that. But I want to see a running back that can take over a game, you know, John Riggins style, or dare I say Jerome Bettis style, just take over a game, become the focal point of the offense, so that like in that college game that we watched with Alabama, when the play action happens, the entire defense is frozen. They are overcommitted already before the exchange even takes place. But and then that just changes everything. It changes the whole thing. Let for the first time since the Bruce Arians era started, and maybe this is the best answer to your question, was Bruce Arians a mistake? Let for the first time defenses come in with the idea that we, in order to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, we have to stop their run. When was the last time that was said? That was said prior to Bruce Arians. So I submit to you, Tony, Bruce Arians himself was a mistake.
Well, actually, you know, what's interesting about that is that I think that the Bruce Arians offense and some of the success that it had, you know, lived on the legacy of the Steelers. I think teams did come in to stop the run. If you look at some of those tapes, there were a lot of games in which the Steelers were playing with defenses that had eight guys in the box, trying to stop that
just
run.
Just based on legacy. Yeah,
based on, you know, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers, hey, and this is what they do, or this is how they're successful.
Let me ask this question, though. When's the last time you said about any team in the league, oh, we need to stop their run first?
Well, it's. I think, you know, you can look at the Minnesota Vikings this year.
That's true. That might be the only
one. Then, of course, you have the Jets a couple years ago, when they were making their playoff run with Sanchez. They were doing that largely based on the run. Yeah. And then, the 49ers, I think, before Kaepernick, I don't think anyone was going out there to stop.
Yeah. I'm not talking the read option right now. So anyway, going back to what Joe was, what you want, and I like also, but I really think that defenses are almost like, hey, you know what? You can run it. We don't care. We're not going to stack the box. And when you try to run on us with your big back and we don't stack the box and we have seven, you know, we have only seven guys in the box or six guys in the box. Sure, you'll have some success, but sooner or later, you're going to get to a third and eight or third and seven and have to pass, and yeah, you're not going to make it. You're not just going to beat us by the run, even if we don't stack the box, because no one. I don't know what it is. It's like no teams commit to it anymore because it's a passing league, I don't know what it is, but it just doesn't happen anymore.
I think you know, if you look at the top running backs in the league, I mean, it's not like the yards per game have gone down in the last couple of years. You know, I mean, they're still run. You know, I mean, we had just had a 2,000 yard rusher this year. And it's constantly the top runners in the league are rushing for 1,600, 1,800 yards in a season. I think what's important and what makes an offense go in the modern league is not just that you have a great quarterback, but that you can be balanced on offense. You know, and especially if you want to make playoff runs, you know, I think Joe's thoughts on offense is a little bit antiquated, but it has a solid foundation, which is that you have to be able to run the football to win a Super Bowl. You have to. You know, there are very few teams that can make a deep playoff run with just throwing the football. And normally those teams will make a playoff run, but they're not necessarily champions, and they're certainly not going to stand the test of time, right? That's, you can't be consistent that way. You have to stay balanced on offense. You look at the top teams this year, you know, the Ravens with Ray Rice, the Patriots this year with Stephen Ridley and Danny Woodhead and all those guys that they're using, you know, that they're very effective when they want to run the football. And one of the biggest reasons why Atlanta, who I think a lot of people thought were going to get blown out or lose to Seattle, one of the reasons that they were able to go to the championship game was because they got a great performance from both Michael Turner and Jacquizz Rodgers in order to propel them past Seattle. So, yeah, I mean, I think shoring up the running game and figuring something out there, whether it's Dwyer or someone else or it's Redmond, doesn't matter, that's got to be solved this offseason.
So let's go through it. Mendenhall, is he here or gone?
Oh, he's gone, right?
Okay.
Joe, there's no way you want him back, right?
I'm asking what you think, but I guess I can ask what you want also.
Yeah. No, I think he's gone. He's definitely gone. There's no way.
Joe, you agree with that?
Do I think he's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously I want him gone. I wanted him gone after the San Diego game when he didn't show up.
Okay. So, let's move on. And Dwyer, you think he stays, right?
Dwyer's definitely staying.
Okay, so then, and we already know Rainey's gone. So the next question is Redmond.
Yeah, Redmond.
He's a free agent, right?
Restricted free agent, but he is a free agent, yeah. So we will get, you know, first rights at him.
And I just read that if Bruce Arians gets a coaching job, head coaching job, he may look to get Redmond on his team.
Yeah, I think you read the same article I did, because that was that Steeler Depot?
It was, yeah, very recent, today or yesterday.
Yeah, today, yeah. I read the same thing. You know, that's fine. I like Isaac Redmond. I think he's a great utility back. I think he brings a lot to the team. I don't think he's irreplaceable. Yeah. And if he was the guy who the Steelers had to go out and find another, if you have to go and find another Isaac Redmond, that's fine. You know, I think that Dwyer can be a feature back. That can be hard to replace. So you wouldn't want to lose Dwyer, and I think he's definitely going
to
stay.
Yeah, so I'm leading up to the draft here. So Baron Batch is going to be on the team, and he'll be like a third down back. He'll basically replace Rainey pretty easily, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's say that Redmond – well, I guess let's just ask the question this way. If Redmond's there, where do they draft a running back, or do they? And if Redmond's not there, where do they draft a running back?
You know, it's you don't like to see your team draft a running back in the first round just because so many of the great running backs in the NFL weren't first round draft picks, you know, and so many first round running backs are total busts. Having said that, if the Steelers pick what, 17, and I think that there'll be a good chance at the number one, you know, or their choice of running back, because I don't know that any running back is going to get taken before them. And if they took a running back there, I wouldn't be disappointed.
Joe, what do you think about that?
It just depends on what who the person is at the time. I don't think it depends. I really don't believe in my mind, if the decision were mine, then it would be based solely on the talent before me and not what I have in the stable, because the known quantities that I have are not premier NFL running backs, none of them. They've all had their chance to be that, and none of them are. Dwyer could become one, but he has not been one yet, and he's got a track record. I would totally disregard what I already have and go, is there something that is world class that I can get? And if I can, I'm taking it. And then I do what I got to do with what I've already got. If it's not there, well, then I'm not gonna burn a draft pick on more of the same. Dwyer's already a good, serviceable guy. He's hungry. He runs hard. He plays hard. Comes prepared, it looks like. So I got that. So I'm not looking for another one of those. I want a marked improvement. If I can get it, I'm taking it, because it is the missing ingredient on the offensive side of the ball now. I mean, you guys, your recap of the offensive line that you did a few minutes ago is very, very well done. I really think that's the missing, not tight end, not wide receiver, that not fullback. It's a world-class running back.
I like that answer, because I was initially thinking, you just don't waste a first round pick on a running back these days. It's just a waste, because these guys are a dime a dozen. You can find them anywhere. You put them behind a good line and they should do pretty well. I mean, look at Washington. However, if you can get this premier guy that you're talking about, and I agree that could be the missing link to this offense. And, then I think I might use the 17 pick, overall on a guy like that, if you can get him.
Otherwise, Tony said though, I mean, look. Yeah. The Steelers have been good throughout their history of digging up talent later in the draft from obscure places. And I don't know if Art Rooney Jr., is as committed to the draft as his, as Dan Rooney was. That's his father, right? I don't know if he is or not, but digging up these players, not necessarily in the first round. I mean, Tony just said it. Most of the great running backs, they're not even drafted in the first round. So wherever the person may come from, it doesn't have to be a first rounder. It just has to be a world class talent, and world class talent in terms, in Pittsburgh Steeler terms of offense. However they define that.
Yeah, I think when look at who's the top runners this year, right? I mean, obviously Adrian Peterson is the best running back this year as far as yards. But you look at Alfred Morris, you look at Jamal Charles. These are guys. I think Marshawn Lynch, same thing, and then Arian Foster. These are guys who are not first round picks. These are guys who are much later round picks.
No, they're not sexy picks. They're not flashy stuff that's going to – you know what I'm saying? And that's really what we need. So you really don't have to burn the 17th pick of the draft.
Yeah, and the other problem with burning a top pick like that is that these guys just don't – they don't have the shelf life of a running back is 5 years, right? Yeah,
right.
So it's like Mendenhall. Mendenhall was a first-round pick, and he was good for some years but wasn't for others.
Yep.
Who's the Alabama running back? What's his name? Lacey?
Yeah, Eddie Lacey, I think his name. Ed Lacey.
Is he a top?
Yeah.
Where's he gonna go? Is he going first round?
Yeah. No, that's not true. We actually might be able to get Eddie Lacey.
I mean,
he's a big guy, right?
He's the style runner that I have hoped for.
Well, of course, yes.
So, I mean, ideally, just like you guys said, it'd be better not to spend a first-round pick on a running back and get a good, serviceable guy in the third or fourth or fifth round that just pans out to be great down the road. But if that guy's sitting there at number 17
– Listen, if Eddie Lacy's sitting there at 17, it's going to be very hard for the Steelers to pass him up, absolutely.
I think that particular pick is worth a first – it's worth a chance on your first round. It is.
It is. I think so too.
Is he? Because he's a game changer, right? Could he be Bettis like?
He's. Yeah, I don't know.
He may not be that big, but
yeah, I don't think he's certainly faster than Bettis was. You know, this guy ran a 4.440.
But he is big.
But he hits. Yeah, absolutely.
That's Steeler foot. We have to get back to that. We have to. If that guy's available at 17. If that guy's available at 17, and I'll tell you what, the Steelers don't pick him, I may become a fan of whoever does pick him.
Listen to this. Now, look, let me ask you this. You're getting so excited about him. How much would you trade up? What would you trade to get him at like 10 or 11 or 8 or 9? Or would you trade?
Dude, I'd be willing to do it.
Would you do a Mike Dick?
You can't trade up for a running back.
Would you trade the whole draft for him?
No. Would you trade the whole draft for him? Yeah, he's Ricky Williams.
There you go.
No, come on. I mean, look, you can't trade up to get a running back. That's insane. But if he's sitting there at 17, there's no way.
This league, because it's a passing league, because running the ball, especially hard running, is a forgotten art that you guys also went through a few minutes ago.
Well, it's not necessarily hard running.
That's why he might fall to us, because nobody wants guys like that.
Oh, no. I mean, first of all, I don't think it's hard running that you're looking for, right?
It's
elusive. You want someone who's elusive. You know, Adrian Peterson's not going to run over Ray Lewis tomorrow, but he could certainly run by Ray Lewis or run around.
He does both.
Yeah.
Doesn't he do both?
He does both. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily that you want to, the guys like Jacob.
You're not
looking
for Peyton Hillis.
Exactly.
You need a guy that if he gets in the open field, he can go 80 yards.
Yeah. Both. You need that best of both worlds type thing.
And the thing is that these teams don't want to waste a first round pick on a running back. That's why a guy like that might slip down to 17. Or not that they don't want to waste it, but so many teams are so enamored by the pass rush and they're picking these defensive linemen, especially the teams that run the 4-3. I mean, they need more defensive linemen.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about our defensive line? You look at Casey.
I want to see it with McClendon in it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I was just gonna say the same thing. Like,
I want to see how Ziggy and what's the other guy's name? Gilbert. Cameron.
Cam Hayward.
And McClendon. I want to see how they play together.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. Hayward was a first round pick, right? A couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe two.
He was a first round pick. Yeah, 2 years ago.
So it's time to start seeing something from him.
Oh, yeah, and look, we're going to cut Kiesel and let him start, I think. I mean, that's probably going to end up happening. Or
he's a first-round pick. He's got to And if he doesn't, then that's kind of a, you know, I don't know if you call it a bust or whatever, but it's time to start looking on a, you know, spending another high draft pick for a defensive lineman. I don't think you do it this year. I think you give him a chance to pan out.
Yeah, but and that's what I'm saying about, you know, this renewed emphasis on, like, let's get pressure on the quarterback. Like, hold on, time out. First of all, let's find out what Jason Worlds can do. Let's find out what Sean Spence can do.
Let's see what we got. Right, we got a stable full of talent.
That's true.
So we pick high. That's nobody's getting a chance. Okay, because they're playing behind, you know, excuse me, but they're playing behind the freaking geriatric squad here. And all right, you know, well, come on, man.
Call them legends. Just say, call them legends that you don't want to take.
McClendon's ass is on the runner, okay? The whole freaking offensive line, everything is moving in McClendon's direction. And then what happens next? McClendon's ass is back on the bench again. And we're going, oh, shit, we just gave up a third and long. What the hell happened?
Yeah, come on. Well, McClendon wouldn't play on third and long.
Let the guy play. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you guys are right in that the Steelers do – I don't know if they do the best because I don't follow all the teams, but they do a real good job about grooming these guys.
Yeah.
They don't do anything. It's like, man, it's his third year. When's he going to do something? And then all of a sudden he blossoms and it's like, well, where the hell did he come from?
Right. And that's what I'm waiting to see. You know,
we need to start reaping.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The idea that the pass rush was a problem last year is true, but the solution to me is not to go out there and draft a first-round pass rusher. It's to let's see what Jason Worlds can do. Let's figure out, you know, if Lamar Woodley has one more season like last year, then it's time to talk about, you know, cutting him because he's making a lot of money, and he had an awful year this year.
Okay, I'm going to tell you who I want to pick in the first round. I want to pick a safety.
Okay.
Because I think it's time to pick somebody and start grooming him so that he's ready in 2 or 3 years.
I agree with you. You have to think that way,
position.
Right?
Because it's such a key position.
Because you don't know what's going to happen with Polamalu. You don't know what's going to happen with Clark. Both of those guys are in their 30s now. I think both of those guys are all pros. I think they're great talents on the Steelers, and I don't want to replace them yet. But like you said, you have to groom someone. You know, certainly safety is going to be a part of the discussion for the first three picks in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I guess let's do this. We're going to have a draft podcast later, but for right now, pick three positions that you'd like to see in the first three rounds.
Quarterback? No. No.
Why don't you do that when you can get Tebow? Okay.
Right. Exactly. No, I think wide receiver, running back, safety are my three, and not in that order. I mean, I don't know about order yet. Joe, what about you?
Well, again, I don't know about the three rounds, but the three positions that I find the most troubling would be running back is my top one. I think that's the one. If you get that one right, that has the biggest impact on the team overall. And then secondly, linebacker, and then I guess thirdly, you'd say safety. I don't know how you can't say safety. Mike's right about that.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to agree with Joe on that and leave out the wide receiver. I think you get the wide receiver in the fourth or fifth round.
I'm sick of wide receivers.
Nah, I mean, like, you know, wide receivers, you got to have depth at wide receiver, right?
Actually, I don't know. That's a tough one. I definitely want running back and safety. So then picking linebacker or wide receiver, I think it's kind of a wash there.
Let me ask you about
linebacker is the definition of Pittsburgh Steelers.
But we already have linebackers. Let me ask you this. Who do you have more faith in panning out? Do you have more faith in let's say, Sean Spence or Chris Carter or Jason Worlds or some of the young wide receivers that we have, like David Gilreath and who's the other guy that we had? Derek Moy, right? You got a lot of faith in these guys?
I don't know that guy.
I haven't seen him play yet.
I mean, I think I have the most faith in Worlds based on what I've seen. And then I go Spence just on the preseason last year. Carter, I don't know if I have as much. I'd like to see more of him. But I guess when I put Carter against Spence, for whatever reason, I like Spence better right now.
Oh, yeah. No, Spence proved it in the preseason. We just got to see him translate that into the regular season. And that's an interesting position, right? Because that's another position where you got to expect the Steelers to make a salary cap move and get rid of Larry Foote.
What happened to that other linebacker that I used to be so
I was just about to ask you about Stevenson Sylvester.
I can't even remember his name. That's how invisible he's been. Sylvester, yeah.
Something happened, man.
So he's been injured a lot.
His butt needs to get in the game, and he needs to produce from the first week. And if he gets hurt, if he can't produce, whatever, I gotta write him off. That's it.
He's been a a staple of the Steelers special teams, but he has certainly not produced as a linebacker. Hasn't even really been given the shot at it. Preseason.
Do you think, okay, let me be optimistic here. Is there a chance that it's all a mental game at linebacker, and maybe he was getting ready and just wasn't ready at the beginning of the season to kind of, because we kept
when
saying
he was in, Mike, to address that your point you're making, when he was in, he looked very tentative, confused,
and that was
not
that was in the preseason.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying is there a chance that, because we wanted to see him spell Larry Foote a lot during the season and then maybe take over, is there a chance that it just didn't happen and he's still learning and he's still grooming and next year's going to be his year?
Well,
because that guy, he's a monster. We've seen him do it. And if he gets in there and he blossoms, he could be the, Tony said it early in this draft, early in this podcast, where's the guy? We're not really excited about it. Guys come on the field and their presence is known. He's the kind of guy that can be that from what we've seen. And so, what we saw him do on special teams and on, maybe in preseason a few times. If he can deliver like that, he can be a guy. I think he's got it. It's just a matter of him showing it in a game.
Yeah, I think the problem with Sylvester is that even Tomlin said it, coming into the season, like, this is Sylvester's year. If he's going to do it, this is going to be the year. And he spent the entire year basically injured and non-participatory.
What year was this? Was this his fourth year?
This is his he was drafted in 2010.
Oh,
so.
So next year will be his third year.
So next year will be his fourth year.
Next
10, 11, 12.
10, 11, 12, yeah. So
he was 10, okay.
Yeah, 10.
So that's not bad. I mean, he could still – I mean, if there is a chance that – like I said, if next year is his year to blossom, let's see.
It's got to be because you can't – you can't – we're not having a five-year project. That
okay, we went through the – like, I guess – Well, yeah, let me think about this. So here's our linebackers next year. So between Harrison and Woodley, let's say we keep one of them, and they're going to start at outside linebacker, and say World is going to start at the other outside linebacker.
Yeah.
And then in the middle, you have Timmons, and then Spence or Sylvester, assuming that Foot doesn't come back. I mean, I think he said he's willing to take less money.
Yeah, he is.
So if they want him, they got him. But it seems like we're ready for a young guy to step up.
I think it's time, yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like that there's enough linebackers there to fill the roster and have good starters, maybe.
You don't know. I mean, you just don't know about, how is Spence going to come back from that injury? He didn't get a season to practice. I mean, he got a season basically to rehab, right?
Yeah.
So he didn't get a season worth of experience.
And how good is he really going to be?
Yeah, exactly.
But between him and Sylvester, maybe one of them worked out.
Well, Sylvester is another guy who we haven't seen anything from, and we haven't seen anything from Sylvester in a year or two. I mean, it wasn't as though he was lighting it up when he was out there. He wouldn't have given the chance.
I think that if you see Larry Foote on the team, then that's going to answer that question.
Well, that's going to be a real disappointment. I mean, I don't know.
The guy played great, though. I mean, he's a – I don't know how old he is, but football player is an old guy. And you got to say hats off to him, but
yeah, but we got to move on. This is a team that has to shed all the legacy guys off that defense and move on with the young talent.
It is the hardest thing to do. I mean, Mike and I watched it in the early '80s as the defense that unbelievable defense that we watched for so long. They just couldn't play anymore. And it's hard to just, and then, there's all these new guys, who the hell is this guy? But it has to happen. It always takes longer when the defenses are great and the guys have great names. It always takes longer than it should. And, rightfully so. I mean, the guys, they earn their spot. They earn their reputation.
Yeah. It's going to be tough. I thought a season ago was when we would get rid of guys like Casey Hampton and Larry Foote. I thought it was going to be time to move on, last year. And you know, so it's, but it is definitely time now. You know, you can't, you know, we can't have this Stevenson Sylvester project and the Sean Spence project. You know, we have to, you have to, you can't let what happened to James Ferrier down the stretch happen again to Larry Foote, right? We need explosive playmakers out there. We have those guys, or at least we think we have those guys. So let's put them out there. Attention. You know,
yeah.
As we all love James Harrison, but you can't, can't sit through another season of, you know, James Harrison.
Well, I mean, arguably all these guys not making plays, being invisible the whole season, that's arguably where all your turnovers where all your exciting defense is.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's where you're wreaking havoc.
I mean, between Woodley, Harrison, and Polamalu in the years in the past, I mean, that's a lot of turnovers.
Yep.
They weren't getting them, or they weren't on the field.
Those are no longer the three best players on defense.
Yeah, but it wasn't – I mean, here's the problem, though. Wasn't Harrison kind of coming on at the end of the season, and then Polamalu in the last game, or game was it? The Cincinnati game?
Cincinnati game, yep. That's when
even the Cleveland game. I mean, he looked like maybe he is coming back. So,
I mean, Polamalu for sure. Polamalu's coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
Harrison is not coming back.
Probably not. That's going to be a sad day.
Yeah, it is.
All right, let's move on to like mailbag or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so we got an email in this week. Although we did not get any MVP or any of that stuff. I guess everyone is as excited as Joe is to name off their MVP of an 8-8 year.
Without awards.
Well, yeah. I got to tell you, Steeler Country, I'm giving you a pass on that one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, it's like – It is probably the quintessential statement about how disappointed we are. I mean, we love our Steelers, all right? Which is why, you know, Steeler Country is so gigantic and it travels so well. And, you know, and in up years and down years, the Steeler jerseys are everywhere. So it's not a fair weather bunch. But, you know, to sit here and ask Steeler Country, hey, who is the most valuable player in this? And who is the most valuable player in an 8-8 season? And the fans go, nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't blame them for that.
Well, we did get one in about. Okay, so this is someone Zach writes in about a pattern that he's found. ESPN has a nice little tool that lets you look over the power rankings, their power rankings for like the last 10 years. So he went through all the way back to 2000. Looking at, you know, kind of the pattern of the Steelers pattern. Sure enough, check this out. So in 2000, the Steelers missed the playoffs, but then they made the playoffs the next 2 years. That trend over a 3-year period, miss the playoffs, make the playoffs, make the playoffs, has continued since today, right? So, the Steelers in 2009, right? So they win the Super Bowl in 2008, then 2009 they missed the playoffs, then they were AFC champs in 2010, make the playoffs in 2011 and then miss the playoffs this year. So, you know, his argument is that the Steelers have two great seasons ahead of them. I like what's that show on CBS? The numbers thing, right? The pattern recognition type stuff. I like this stuff. I used to do this a lot, you know, when I had too much free time and looking up, you know, well, who went for 100 yards or whatever and how many times has he done that in two games in a row and all that kind of thing. I think missing the playoffs this year, much like missing the playoffs in 2009, much like the 2006 playoffs, it's not an indicator of things to come. You know, when the Steelers missed the playoffs in 2006, it was because Bill Cowher was basically retiring. It wasn't because that team lacked talent. In 2009, when they missed the playoffs, it was because, well, I'll let Joe talk about the special teams problems of that season, but it was because the Troy Polamalu missed, you know, a large portion of that season. And 2012, I mean, this was just an offensive team in turnaround and you know, a lot of off the field stuff. But when you look at the
lack of discipline
and the lack of discipline, yeah. But I don't think that doesn't speak to a larger problem with this team or, you know, that this team is headed in the wrong direction. I think this team is headed in the right direction. I think, this team only has good things ahead of it.
Man, I love that email because I love the whole pattern thing also. And I never realized that. So that basically the Steelers made the playoffs in the 2000s every year except 2003, 6, 9, and now 2012.
And now 12, yeah.
That's neat. And back when I was a kid and the Steelers winning Super Bowls, well, here was the pattern. It was, these are Super Bowl winners. Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Oakland, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Oakland. And then Super Bowl 16, it was supposed to be Dallas and they screwed it up because of the catch.
Oh, really?
The catch.
Screwed the pattern up was pattern. Broken.
Wow.
That's right.
That's true. That was a pattern. People actually were talking about it back in those days. Yeah, it was not. It was a known thing. Yeah, that the pattern was repeating.
Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Oakland, Dallas.
But Dwight Clark had to jump 8 inches off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Steelers. If you look at the Steelers, and you look at what happens in the years in which they don't make the playoffs, right? I mean, Let's go all the way back to when to the 2003, right? 2003, we missed the playoffs. Okay. And then 2004, we get Ben, right?
Clearly. We had to miss the playoffs to get Ben.
We had to miss the playoffs to get Ben, right? You missed the playoffs in 2006. Okay. Cowher retires. Now you get in Tomlin. Boom. You know, we're off and running again. 2009 was just a weird year with, you know, special teams issues and Polamalu being out. But once you got,
who was Tomlin's first pick?
Lawrence Timmons.
Not bad.
In 2007, right?
Yep.
He got Timmons and
Woodley.
Woodley in the same year.
Yeah, one after the other.
It's a well nice draft. Done.
Yeah, right. Not a
well done.
Not a bad draft in 2007. All right, that's the email. Oh, he also has a similar theory about Indiana Jones movies. So obviously the first and third one's good. Second and fourth ones, not so much. I've actually never seen any Indiana Jones movie, and I'll admit that on the podcast.
Does that mean there's a fifth one coming out?
Well, he said that they're not going to make a fifth one, which is disappointing because it could have been the best one, you know.
Not as excited about that pattern, but
as Indiana Jones, I've never seen it. I've heard they're good, never seen them. I don't know why.
Well, after what they did in the fourth movie, and then the way South Park criticized them, I think I would just stay away from making another one if I were Lucas and Spielberg, and just move on.
Yeah.
So are we ready to do our awards, or is there
any more mail?
Mailbag?
We got a mail from Neil about this team lacking discipline, attitudes, commitment to the team lacking. It starts with Ben. It's the difference between if you look at what Denver, Indianapolis, New England did. They have a quarterback who leads the team, who buys in. Ben needs to learn a lesson from those guys. Basically, I'm paraphrasing Neil's email here. But I mean, I think we've talked about that.
We've kind of covered that. That's, yeah. And I agree. And when you talk about those seasons that they didn't make the Super Bowl or didn't make the playoffs, we talked about Cowher, whether it be special teams or Polamalu got hurt. I mean, what are we going to say about this season? Is it going to be the discipline or is it going to be new offense coordinator?
Which one's going to be lack predominant? Of discipline?
I think it's going to be discipline. I think I'm going to remember this season for all the the penalties. The eight
fumbles in
game. The late turnovers in the season. The season started really well with as far as turnovers went. They weren't turning the ball over, but then man, as this thing went on, it was it got ugly.
It did, and that, maybe that is a synopsis of the discipline. Is here you are, you're a good team, you don't have your quarterback, and you're playing a bad team in Cleveland. I mean, they're kind of up and coming. And then you fumble the ball 8 times. I mean, that's got to be lack of discipline, right?
Yeah,
it's not just unlucky.
It was.
A bad team having a good day.
Yeah, we thought it was at the time. We said, oh, it's just unlucky. But I think the farther you get away from that, and when you look at the Steelers, if you look at the way the Steelers ended the season, that was indicative of a locker room that was divided, or losing respect for management, or the coaching staff, or whoever. Something is going on there where that team lacks
If you go back and listen to that podcast, we actually said this is either something that just is out of the norm, that's a weird thing, or it's indicative of a big problem. Yeah. And it turns out it was indicative of a big problem, which is why this season has to be remembered as the season, the lack of discipline season. The one thing about the Steelers – whenever they've had a problem, albeit they've all been, the ones I'm going to refer to are football problems, but when the Steelers couldn't defend the spread offense, the Steelers answered with great cornerback play, was the likes of, I think Rod Woodson was drafted right around then. The secondary that followed was world-class secondary.
No, but the spread thing happened to us in the
80s.
No. Well, it also happened in 2001.
Oh, no, I'm thinking the 92-10 thing. Right, and then the spread happened with Cower.
Right.
The spread happened with Cower.
Yeah. But they solved that too. Remember, I mean, that's, you know, the year we went 15-1 with Ben. You know, that was the year Deshae Townsend had an outstanding year. They kind of, they rid themselves of the Chad Scott and Dwayne Washington thing and, you know, moved on to McFadden, and Townsend. And I mean, it was, you know, it was head and shoulders better than it had been.
So they usually, my point is they usually address a glaring problem, with an exclamation point.
Yeah.
And so I hope they do. This time it's discipline. And I don't think it's any, I mean, if we can tell from here, imagine what it really is.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys know the details and they know where it's emanating from and, you know, who the carriers are. And they're going to weed that. I believe they're going to weed that locker room. There may be some surprises.
You got it. Yeah, I know. And you got to think that some of these guys, I just picture offensive linemen for whatever reason. Well, maybe not offensive linemen, just whoever hard-nosed guys that just want to play and work hard and win, and they see that crap going on in the locker room, must frustrate the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Especially when they know that they're losing games because of it.
The leadership void in that offensive locker room is going to need to be filled next year, and I don't know who, you know, I mean, Pouncey, Heath, Dwyer.
Got to step up. Timmons?
Someone.
Step up.
Yep. All right, let's get to Joe's favorite stuff. Players of the year. So we'll do most improved, defensive MVP, offensive MVP, and then MVP. So let's start with the most improved player of the year. I don't know who's prepped for this and who isn't, so I'm going to start with Mike and hope that he's done his homework. Your most improved player of the year.
Okay, I can't say I've done my homework, but I do have an answer. I think it's a good answer. And the only reason I don't know how improved he is because I knew he was kind of – didn't have a great season last season, but I don't have the stats in front of me to prove it. So my most improved player went 28 of 31 on field goals, and it is my boy Swishy.
Yeah.
Swish him. Yeah. I mean, I think that he was basically borderline making the team based on his, I'd say, average performance of last year. And he did great this year. He missed 3 field goals. 2 were over 50 yards. And 1 was basically botched snap short field goal. And he was money in some of the games that
– It's funny that
we only won 8 games, and we won a couple of them because of him.
Well, but – okay, so like the 2 that he missed 50 yarders though?
Yeah, we could have won those.
I mean, we lost those. And I mean, not to say that he was the reason, but if he makes that field goal against, well, he makes either one and we win, yeah. But no, I agree with you. I agree. That's a good pick. You know, I didn't think of Swishim. He's not who I picked.
And I kind of defend Joe in the, this little Miss Congeniality award here, mm-hmm. of most improved player by picking a kicker. So how's that?
Oh, this is going to be a one time. Player, this is going to be our one-time event. That's bad. All right, I'm going to go with mine, then I'll let Joe do. Okay, so my most improved player is kind of a cheat. I'm kind of cheating on this one, and I don't care because I make up the rules. I'm going to go with Mike Adams, and I know he's a rookie, so it's impossible for him to have improved over last season. But I'm going to say that he improved from training camp. You know, here's a guy in training camp. When we saw this guy play, everyone thought, oh, boy, he's a work in progress for sure. Let's not let him see the field at all this year, and we'll let him, you know, we'll just – you know, let him work this out and we'll try again next year. But he got forced onto the field pretty early in the season too. And I'll be damned if he didn't play some pretty inspired football, improving an already good offensive line to making it a great running offensive line. I mean, you know, this is a team that didn't have 2 consecutive 100-yard rushers for years. And he comes in and Dwyer and Redmond are both going for 100 yards in consecutive weeks. It was awesome. Yeah, I think he's my most improved player, even if it is a bit of a cheat. So, Joe.
So now you have picked for the MVP a coach,
uh-huh.
okay, who is not a player.
Not a player, no. Nope. Okay.
The P in MVP is?
Player, yeah, person.
So this has happened if Steeler Country, you know, is not following me.
Person, but whatever.
Tony, Tony picked for MVP 1 year, Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Okay. Picked Mike Tomlin as the MVP. Okay.
I can't remember. I think I agreed. Now, but did I pick him too? I don't remember.
The guy, now he cooks up this namby pamby what is it? Most improved player? Is that what this is?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Most improved player. I mean, are you just looking to fill time? The podcasts are 2 hours to begin with. Are they not long? Are we not providing enough content here for you? Or do you just like goofy rules? That must, this must be why you're constantly defending the NFL's indefensible rule
book. I don't defend the, the rules.
You are constantly defending it to me. Nope. All right, so now I have to pick. So you want me to pick after you picked a first-year guy as a most improved player. Most improved over what?
Over the preseason.
What?
Or I like that
obeying of the traffic laws in what is he most improved in? Best, is he dressing better than he was a year ago? What?
Probably he's got a lot more money.
All right. Well, congratulations, Mike Adams. You may have won the most goofy award of all time. All right, so for my most improved player then, most improved player. This is offense or defense, right? I got 53 guys to choose from. I select Lawrence Timmons.
Yep.
I think there's no argument there. I don't know who else improved more from one season to the next of the starters, and not, you know, not including first-year guys. I have to go with Timmons.
Yeah, that's a good pick. He had a great year. And, he, really, a guy who we were kind of – crapping on early in the year. I remember saying, like, where's Timmons? What's going on with Timmons?
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
He started last year, right?
He's been starting for, yeah. He's been starting.
Yeah.
It's like his third year starting.
Yeah, they just gave him a big contract in the offseason too, last year. So it's good to see. You know, he took it to another level this year. He was second best defensive player, first best defensive player. We'll see right now. Let's go to that. Joe, being that Lawrence Timmons is your most improved player, is he also your defensive player of the year?
No, sir. Ooh. No, sir. The most valuable player on defense would have to be the guy who's most responsible for your defense, you know, winning football games for you and shoring things up.
Did you?
No surprise. Go ahead. What?
Did you name the defense after this player?
I did, the Keenan Lewis defense.
How about that?
Keenan Lewis absolutely is the most valuable player, arguably on the team, but I have a different pick for that. So the most valuable player on defense goes to Keenan Lewis. A very, very, very close runner-up to MVP would be Keenan Lewis. I mean, this guy, the defense was hemorrhaging yards, hemorrhaging points, hemorrhaging reputation. It was a joke. Starting out in Denver and then giving up, 30-some points in Oakland and just a god-awful start until Keenan Lewis was called on, stepped up and delivered and stopped the bleeding on defense. Absolutely the most valuable player on defense. The reason that the Steelers were able to only lose 8 games and not a whole lot more. So Keenan Lewis, kudos to you, buddy. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Keenan Lewis had a terrific season. Mike, your defensive player of the year.
Well, I am going to agree with Joe on the Keenan Lewis defense. I kind of made fun of you making fun of me, calling it that earlier in the season, but I agree that he did make the difference, and it was nice to have two good cornerbacks on the field, and he came through. He had... When I look at the stats, I know you don't like stats, so I will be happy to read them out to you. Ike Taylor had 13 pass defense, and he doesn't get thrown to as much because he's our number one cover guy.
Yep.
But Keenan Lewis had 23. I mean, that's a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't know how that ranks in the whole league, but that's a lot. The only downfall is I don't believe he had any interceptions. He did not.
No, he didn't.
So, you know, for whatever. I mean, that's kind of – sometimes it's luck or whatever, but – he was great, and I expect him to continue on. I'd like to know the games that he missed. I know he missed the Dallas game, which was – we missed him sorely, right?
Quite obviously.
Yeah,
we missed him.
And I can't remember. He did play the Cincinnati game, didn't he?
A little bit worse.
He did, yeah.
He was hurt, or he got banged up at the end.
He was banged up in the Dallas game, and he played through it. He played through the whole Cincinnati game. I believe he played the whole game. Maybe he missed a couple plays. But, yeah, he played through injury at the end of the year and did so admirably.
Oh, he did not play in the Dallas game.
At the end, we had guys we don't even know out on the field.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he didn't play in the Dallas game.
No, he did.
Wait, he did.
Did he go down in the Dallas game?
No. The other one. No, the other guy didn't play. Cortez Allen didn't play.
Cortez Allen. But I thought Keenan Lewis didn't play either.
Maybe he went down, maybe he did.
I don't – I remember – that's the game we watched at the bar.
Right.
And we were talking about who – we didn't know any of these guys.
Right. Well, that's when Victorian came in.
And the other guy was out there too.
Yeah. Victorian and
some other guy.
Curtis Brown. Yeah, they were there. Okay, yeah, you're right.
But there was even another guy that I never heard of. I never heard of Curtis Brown.
Brown.
Because Will Allen didn't play either, right?
No, Allen didn't play there. Victorian was out there. Was it Golden that you – oh, Golden.
Yeah,
Golden. That's the other guy. Yeah. Keenan Lewis, number two in pass defenses in the NFL.
In the NFL.
23.
In the NFL. Guy who never, who really didn't start any game before this year.
Yeah. 23 passes defended, number two to Richard Sherman.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
This guy, I got to tell you, man, it is so refreshing to have a secondary like that. I mean, I just when you went through Tony a few minutes ago and you mentioned names that I'm happy to have forgotten.
Chad
Washington and Scott, and you know, so we went from Woodley and Lake, right, to those guys, and then we did okay with Townsend and McFadden. I mean, I'm not gonna crap all over those guys. They were decent guys, right? But these guys that we're getting now, Cortez Allen and Keenan. These guys are freaking – they are stifling defenders. They are tailor-made to just shut off a long passing game and a medium passing game. They are awesome, man. It's refreshing to have that out there because when the ball goes up, usually I'm not real worried. I figure, well, no, man, my guys are out there, and they're going to have this thing covered. That is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to hurt to get – if Keenan Lewis does leave the team, he's an unrestricted free agent. The Steelers will obviously have to open the checkbook – open their checkbook if they want to keep him. But he I think he's worth keeping. You know, the only
yeah, they're urging a lot of money. They ought to be able to give some money to him.
The only – the question is did the play of Cortez Allen down the stretch – open up a roster spot or open up Keenan Lewis's roster spot and make that available to Allen. You know, did he play himself into a starting role next year?
I think I want to see so badly. I hope not. I want to see our corners eventually become Allen and Lewis.
Yeah.
Back there. And maybe Will Allen. I mean, that guy's playing pretty well.
It may be that they meet too. You know, that's probably too good to be true though. Right. I mean, the idea that you could keep Ike and Keenan Lewis and Cortez Allen for until Ike retires, and then you keep Keenan Lewis and Allen after that. I don't know. That just doesn't seem like it would be feasible in the modern NFL. I feel like one of those guys is going to have to go.
What's I don't Ike's know. Contract? I'm not a roster examiner like you guys.
When does Ike's contract end?
He just got a new contract like last year, I think. So he's on the team till he wants to retire.
Something's going to give.
Yes, it is. Okay, so my defensive player of the year, or I called the defensive MVP because I'm going to cheat again. I'm not going to cheat. I was going to give it to Carnell Lake.
Carnell Lake?
Yeah, he's the secondary coach.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah. So I think he's done an unbelievable job since he got here. And this year was, you know, kind of the icing on the cake. I mean, you look at two seasons of not getting pass rush, not getting turnovers, not being a traditional, you know, the traditional Steeler defense. And yet this defense was as good as any of those defenses. I mean, you know, down the stretch when the offense was playing poorly, the defense stepped up, man. I mean, you know, you look at how poorly they played against Cincinnati. And yet we lost that game by 3 points. And only because we turned the ball over too many times. I mean, the defense gave up 3 points in the game, if I remember correctly. Then there was the pick six, and then Ben's interception.
That happened several times this season.
You know, this defense played, inspired football, and the secondary led the team. So Carnell Lake, would be my defensive MVP. But I'm gonna still cheat, and I'm gonna really give it to, three players, my co-MVP. Ike Taylor, Keenan Lewis, Ryan Clark. You know, I'd love to just give it to Keenan Lewis. I think Keenan Lewis played really well. But, you know, you wouldn't think so highly of Keenan Lewis if you didn't have Ike Taylor lining up beside him. And Ike Taylor wouldn't have had the season that he had if he hadn't had the safety help over the top of Ryan Clark. So I can't separate any of those guys and say, like, well, this guy had a much better year than the other guys, because those guys all worked in tandem to make this thing work. You know, switching to that man-to-man defense meant that all three of those guys had to have the year that they had in order for this defense to have the success that it had, and they all did. So co-MVP.
So your pick is split 50% or half to Keenan Lewis, half to Ike Taylor,
yeah,
with the remaining half to Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark, yeah.
Uh-huh. Outstanding.
Thank you.
How many halves are there in a hole?
Yeah, three, I think.
You.
It's like, we're going to make another South Park reference, man, bear, pig, half man, half bear, half pig. Too many South Park references.
I like Ryan Clark. I mean, he's solid, solid player. So.
Yeah, we don't recognize him enough. He is awesome. My only argument with what your pick, Tone, is that the other two guys were already in the defense, and it was Keenan Lewis that made the difference.
That's true.
Ike Taylor missed some games, didn't he?
He did. He did. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. I'm not kicking Ike out of that. I was gonna say maybe it's just Clark and Lewis, but no, I'm not doing that because they're all good.
You were gonna pick Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark. Exactly. Lewis and Clark.
Expedition.
We should explore that option.
We should. I thought I was going to make a Superman reference. I guess Lewis. Yeah, okay. I gotcha. Because wasn't that a show on? I think it was a show on TBS.
It was Lois and Clark.
Lois and Clark. Yeah, same thing.
Which I think was a play on Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, I think it was. Okay, anyway. We're way in the weeds. All right, I'm going to go offensive MVP. I'll start because I went last. So my offensive MVP, you know, the guy who had the best year offensively clearly is Heath Miller. I thought he had a terrific year. He bailed us out in a lot of situations. Ton of big catches. You know, the whole and let's be honest here, the offense came apart because of him, right? Because the argument was, why aren't we getting Heath Miller the ball more? And you know, that was a good question, because he had an outstanding year. He was great in the red zone. I mean, just great all over. He just had an unbelievable year. And I know he got voted the team MVP. I'm not going to give him team MVP, but I'll give him offensive MVP because he had a hell of a year. So.
That's a
I'll
great
just
pick.
Say ditto.
Yeah.
Because Heath is a monster.
Yeah.
And it's nice to finally get him the ball a lot more. So I believe he was second in the team in receiving yards.
Yep. Joe, your offensive MVP.
Well, before I reveal my very unique pick, I want to just say that I'm very glad that, and probably though a more appropriate award for the offense this year, rather than the most valuable offensive player or offensive player, would be the most disappointing offensive player of the year, because that would be a difficult choice. Okay, there would be a lot of considerations to go around. But in this case, because you want me to pick the most valuable, who on the offense contributed more to the success of the team? I guess I have to go with Heath Miller as well.
Yeah,
there's really no other choice on offense that's even close. And really Heath Miller has been a stalwart. He has been a solid guy for his whole career. He's really a great example of a Pittsburgh Steeler, you know, the way I've always envisioned. He's in the cloth from Hines Ward, you know, and Rocky Blyer. These workman guys that just come out and love to play the game. They love the fact that they're a Pittsburgh Steeler. They just make you have respect for athletes and respect for the game. That's Heath Miller. The guy totally deserves more recognition than he gets. And I hope he's an even bigger part of the offense next year than he
was. If he's healthy.
He's the guy I'm thinking of when I'm saying that there's these hardworking guys that are frustrated about the discipline.
He would be at the top of the list, and I wish he could be the guy that could be the leader in the locker room for that offense.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not. I wish he would be.
And he made the Pro Bowl, right? He's not going, but he made it. Because of his injury.
That's right, yeah, because of his injury, right. All right. So, that brings us to MVP. I want to talk to you guys about, first of all, let's just talk about what MVP means. Right, because there's a lot of discussion about, is this the best player? Is it you go with most valuable? And then if we're going most valuable, here's my question. In a year in which it was a disappointing year, and they went 8-8, should most valuable then be who's most responsible for the disappointing year?
Yeah, well,
that would be like my most
out.
Disappointing player yes. on offense.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, when they don't make the playoffs, we shouldn't have most valuable and best offensive. We should have the worst players. I mean, it's a negative podcast the whole year. We should just top it off or wrap it up with just the, you know, the worst players on the team and the reason they missed the playoffs.
So with my MVP pick, I really thought about going with Bruce Arians. I really wanted to. but I couldn't do it. It was going to be funny. But, I don't know what you guys' picks are, but I'm going to go with Ben as the most valuable player. And I think it shows the way that he was playing in the middle of the season. You know, we had the best third down percentage. I mean, we were converting third downs at a rate that, you know, was unbelievable. You look at the number one team right now, it's the Patriots. They're converting, 47%? We were converting 52. I mean, we were better than 50% on third down. It was crazy. And it all has to do with Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he never really had a great running game behind him. He never had, you know, that – and he never had a great relationship with his offensive coordinator, I guess. But, you know, he made it work at some points. And then, you know, to prove how valuable he is that when he turned on the offense and when he started to say, like, I'm not liking this, I'm not enjoying this anymore, like, it went to crap. It went to shit. So, he's the most valuable guy. If you get Ben Roethlisberger in line, if you make him believe – then this team goes. And if he doesn't believe, and if he's not on board, then this is a sinking ship. And it proved, I mean, they proved it this year. So
your pick is based on valuable, as it says in this.
Yes.
In the title.
Yes.
To the team. Okay. Yes. That makes sense.
That's my pick. So who wants to go? Who has, Joe, I'm guessing that you have an interesting MVP. So I'm going to go with Mike.
All right, good. Save the best for last. Listen. Yeah.
Well, means that he thinks that Mike has a boring
game.
That's right.
No,
and I'm very sorry to hear that, Mike. I hope your pick knocks us out.
But mine is a nice transition because you brought up the word valuable. So if I were to pick a valuable player, like you said, mm-hmm. I have an answer for that. But I'm not picking that way. I'm picking what I consider just basically the best player. So we picked the best offense, the best defense. So one of those two players that I picked is really the second best on that side of the ball because this guy's better. Mm-hmm. But I will start by saying if we're going to pick valuable, I think just like you said with Ben and how when it tailed off that I think it would be Polamalu that basically he missed all his games. And when if he were there healthy as he started to get in the last two games, who knows what we would have seen from the defense. Maybe we got the turnovers that made the difference or made the plays. I mean, as great as that defense was, they still gave up kind of like what Atlanta did to Seattle. They had to do two plays in 30 seconds to get in field goal range. I mean, Cincinnati did it in one play.
Yeah.
I mean, it was against our great defense. So anyway, and with that said, this is a bad transition to my MVP, who is Lawrence Timmons. I think that he played the best all around. He had second – on the team in tackles. He had three interceptions and two forced fumbles. I mean, for a team that had, 20 turnovers, he caused five of them, so one-fourth of them. And he recovered a fumble, so that's another one. So anyway, I think that, Joe pointed out he was the most improved player. I agree with that. But I think overall he was the best player on the team.
He's the kind of guy that you can, you know, you're gonna build this defense around him, right? I mean, you know, you look at what this defense was in 2008 and that those guys are basically gone now, and you have to kind of build around what you have now. I think Lawrence Timmons is probably at the center of whatever the new thing is. It centers around, I mean, he is the focal point of that. You can't be a great Steeler defense if you don't have that great Steeler middle linebacker. And we thought for a long time that he wasn't, you know, he was going to be that, and then he wasn't going to be that. And now, I mean, it's, you know, and you know what the great thing about Lawrence Timmons, the really great thing, especially, is that he doesn't get hurt, right? I mean, knock on wood.
Oh my God.
I know. I don't know why I said that. As soon as I was saying it, I was like, oh no, it's a Mike jinx.
but Mike jinx. Wow. This is Tony keep whacking Mike on the head.
Sorry.
Did any of my predictions come true this year?
I don't think so. Mm. Maybe you got one. I think you got one. Like you nailed one though. Might've nailed one. Like the score as far as the score.
Score. Yeah. That's not that big though.
All right. Very appropriate pick. I agree.
This brings us to Joe. Now, just to go over who his MVP picks have been in the past. I believe he picked, Polamalu at one point. I think he picked Ben, and then I think he picked a punter as his.
I never picked Ben.
Didn't he pick Antonio Brown?
Oh, he picked Antonio Brown. Oh, that's right. He picked Antonio Brown before Antonio Brown was good.
Based on two catches. Which were two big catches?
Give Sepulveda. 2009. What was the name of our punter?
Sepulveda.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, there was no question that he was the most valuable
special
player.
Teams guy on that special team.
Yeah, on that special teams. Yeah, in the year in which he like his head exploded for special teams. Actually, you know what's funny, Joe? Is yesterday
He saved. Listen, we lost games. We lost games on giving up punt returns for touchdowns and other things, right?
Yeah.
And this guy made multiple. Okay, I'm not talking one or two. Too many to recall. He made touchdown-saving tackles, probably points-saving tackles, okay, in 2009, that without him making those tackles, who knows how many games we would have lost. Absolutely, he was the most valuable player. Come on.
All right, here you go.
I like Mike's Lawrence Timmons. Timmons is, you know, hopefully he becomes, you know, he's well on his way to becoming a monster. And we, you know, every Steeler defense needs its monsters. You know, there is a monster void on the defense right now. And I think, Timmons is a as good a candidate as anybody to become the next monster for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That being said, we are talking about the 2012 season. And I am now tasked with naming the most valuable player on this team. Which individual on this team was more responsible for winning games as opposed to losing them. And without this person, we would have lost even more games. So in my mind, there is absolutely no question who this individual is. And no one has come close. The person's name has not been uttered on this podcast to this point. So let me be the first to say it. Dick LeBeau.
Hey, oh, you did. Okay, all right. Well, okay, all right. So LeBeau, you know, we were just talking. I almost said earlier on this podcast when we talked about, you know, why don't we blitz safeties and corners and that kind of thing. I mean, the argument could kind of be made, right, that like the game is passing him by.
No, he likes to do. I think he likes those blitzes. He just has a reason he's not doing it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think he thinks he doesn't have the personnel, or he's worried about. Or maybe Tomlin put the stamp on it and says, listen, I don't want to give up the big play.
Yeah.
So don't let that happen. I don't know.
Dick LeBeau is the consummate coach. He is the consummate defensive mind. This guy invented the freaking zone blitz, okay? He's the godfather of it. And this year he went completely away from it and adjusted his defense to something totally different and still manages to deliver – statistically the best defense in the league. Now, because of the turnovers, because of the inability to get to the quarterback, the inability to wreak havoc, this defense was not capable of winning games. It could only prevent us from losing games. And it did that a lot of times. And without the adjustments that he made, this is probably one of the most miserable Steeler seasons on record. Because that offense wasn't going to win anything for us in the second half of the season, and it was incapable of winning games without the defense stepping up early in the season. So without Dick LeBeau's defense turning the corner and doing it fast, This is not an 8-8 season. This is a 4-12 season. Dick LeBeau, absolutely most valuable player on this team.
Most valuable person, not a player. He's not a player. He's a person.
Coach. Coach. MVC. MVC.
Sure. I picked Talman when I can't fault you for that pick. Yeah, I like that pick. I like
pick. LeBeau.
Yep.
So, all right. I can argue that.
All right, well, then we gotta quickly get to around the NFL because we are almost 2 hours into this podcast, but I do want to talk about the games this weekend. I want to start with a text message conversation that Mike and I had on Saturday. If you watch the Denver versus Baltimore game, there's a lot of things to talk about in that game. But one of the things that Mike and I had the most fun talking about was what would happen to Joe if he were a Baltimore Raven fan, watching his team in the playoffs give up not one, but two punt returns for touchdowns. Well, but they kick returns for touchdowns. The other – wait.
They were, one was a punt, one was a kick.
One was a punt, one was a kick? Okay.
And they were both 90-plus yards.
Yeah. So, Joe, give me your thoughts on the Baltimore Ravens special team performance. Maybe where it ranks historically. Have you ever seen a playoff team be that bad at special teams? And what do you feel about – how do you feel about the fact that Baltimore in the regular season was rated as the number one special teams in the NFL?
Well, that just proves the stats thing for me, baby. You are wasting your time with all them stats. Because on that day, they were the worst special teams in the league. And they may have been, I don't know if it's ever been done before. I mean, I don't look that stuff up. You know, how I would react is not all that far off. Granted, it was not a playoff game, but in Kansas City, we've already talked about this in 2009. I will never forget it. That, what's my reaction? It is a thing I would never stop talking about, never forget, never forgive. I just can't get over it. 2009, the Steelers give up two kick returns for touchdowns. I don't know if they were punts or kick. I think one was the opening kickoff, and another one was maybe a punt. So very similar.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't a playoff game, but it was against the lowly. They were one of the worst teams in the league, arguably probably one of the worst teams in the history of football probably. They were a miserably bad team, and there went the Steelers off to Kansas City to lose a game by less than a touchdown, giving up two kick returns for touchdowns. So how would I react? Very much like that, except this was a playoff game, and the Ravens luckily didn't lose it. The Steelers did go on to lose that Kansas City game.
Joe, I just had a chance to look up Sepulveda's stats again in 2009. He had four tackles that year.
Touchdown-saving tackles.
Yeah.
Touchdown-saving tackles.
That's pretty good for a punter to have four tackles. That's
that is the mark of an MVP, my friend.
All right, well, let's talk about this Baltimore versus Denver game. Obviously, every Steeler fan out there is pulling for Denver because of our hatred of Baltimore. And it seemed like Denver had this one pretty much in hand. They let Baltimore hang around a little too much, and there was some weird officiating early on. But, Denver seemed to be pulling away at times. But when they let Flacco hang around, and then just the most inexplicable play I've ever seen, maybe ever. I don't know that I've ever seen a play that crazy before. With 30 seconds to go, Flacco just heaves it up, needing a miracle, and two defenders make. I mean, you know, you want to talk about like great secondary versus like the crap secondary, right? This was some of the worst secondary play I've seen from a playoff team. I'm glad that Denver's out, because they didn't deserve to go any further. And Mike, I think you sent a text message to me on Saturday, basically saying the same thing.
Absolutely, that's just amazing. First of all, Flacco, how many times did he throw the ball just up in the air, 50-50 ball, and they either get a pass interference penalty or catch the ball? And who was Torrey Smith? I mean, he beat up Champ Bailey pretty good.
Yeah.
And I give credit to Flacco a little bit. He had some good throws, but a couple of them, like the last one, I mean, and granted there were 30 seconds left, like you said, you're just throwing up, seeing what happens. That play started at the 30-yard line. It was 3rd and 3 from their own 30 with 40 seconds when that play started. I mean, how, and they need a touchdown to win, right? right? Or to tie. Need a touchdown tie. How do you give that up? That's just amazing. I mean, even if you let him catch the ball, you tackle him there, and now there's 30 seconds left from the 20-yard line, basically, and they have to throw to the end zone. They'll have some chances, but they still have to make it.
Yeah.
That's just crazy to let him get behind you. And I know the guy feels terrible about it. He knows he made a mistake, and
one of the worst plays on the ball I've ever seen. Joe, this seemed like a weekend in which quarterbacks were able to make just the dumbest decisions, and yet they got away with it. I mean, it happened to Flacco and Matt Ryan. I mean, the play before Joe Flacco throws that 80-yarder, he went and he had a run, right? There was like no timeouts left, and he ran the ball.
That's right. He got pressure, and there was a wide open lane, and he ran it and got, I guess, 7 yards because it was third and three on the next play.
Craziness.
Yes, yeah, could see Forrest Gump and his evil twin brother, Forrest Gump, in the Super Bowl this year. That being the Atlanta Falcons versus the Ravens. I am gonna go with this Forrest Gump analogy. I can't get it out of my head. If you don't know who Forrest Gump is, you need to watch the movie. But basically the definition of Forrest Gump is
I'm like, who doesn't know Forrest Gump? Yeah, I thought you were going to tell us what players you're talking about.
Forrest Gump.
Everyone knows who Forrest Gump is.
Joe Flacco, obviously. I know, but who's the other one? Obviously is Forrest.
You said Forrest Gump and the other Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump goes to the NFL starring Joe Flacco. Who's the other player?
And Matt Ryan.
You're talking about Matt Ryan also?
His evil twin.
Okay.
From the other league. You know, look. This is defined. It's one thing to, like, just have a lucky play, right? I mean, you do something and you get lucky with it, right? It's another thing to do absolutely the wrong thing, okay, at the wrong time, and it turn out to be fantastic, better than you could have done had you done the right thing. And that's what happens to Forrest Joe Flacco Gump, okay? It is the most amazing thing to me. This guy must have, I don't know, maybe he must have done some really good things in his life because he has got guardian angels just looking out for, come on, man. I mean, this is the guy. I'm going back, okay? Sorry, if you don't want to hear this, I'm sorry. But I'm going back to the San Diego 4th and 29, okay? 4th and 29. This team, the game is over if you don't convert the first down. It's fourth down and 29 yards to go. And what does Joe Flacco do? He throws a 2-yard dump pass to Rice. Okay. And there's five defenders 5 yards away from him. Okay. So don't sit here and tell me what a great decision Joe Flacco. I think that Joe Flacco in the moment after the ball is snapped, he does not know anything about the situation. I really don't think he does. I think all he's doing is looking to see who's open. What kind of play can I make? What's the defense doing? That's what he's doing. He has no idea what the down is. I don't even think he knows who the other team is. I don't think he knew what was a playoff game. I don't think he knows if it's the first quarter, the fourth quarter, what the score is. I don't think he knows any of that. I think he only knows this is the play I'm calling. Okay, because what he does after the ball is snapped is completely inexplicable. There is no explanation for a 2-yard dump pass on 4th and 29. There is no explanation equally. Okay, on
what about hey diddle diddle
on second down? There is no explanation for a quarterback with 40 seconds on the clock, with no timeouts, 70 yards to go, and you have to score a touchdown to tie. Okay, for that quarterback to take off running and get tackled in the middle of the field and then still turn around and win the game. Tell me how that can happen.
Here's an interesting part. I like that Skype. I like the way that Skype just like auto mutes him as he gets louder. See? Okay, so I think one of the most interesting and parts of the Denver game was I actually thought that Denver got outcoached by Baltimore. I thought Denver made some really bonehead decisions, especially as the game went on. They ran the ball three times instead of trying to get a first down.
Hey, before you do that, but wait, they ran the ball. I think it was 5 yards, ran the ball 8 yards, got a first down. This is like with 3 minutes left. And then they ran the ball two times and came up with a 3rd and 7 with like 2 minutes left somewhere in there. So now that's the question right there. What do you do on 3rd and 7? You got Peyton Manning. You did everything you could to get Peyton Manning on your team to get you to the Super Bowl. It's 3rd and 7, a first down, game over.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I think
let him throw the ball.
You got to throw. You got to. I mean, that's why, you know, you don't have Peyton Manning to hand off. You got Peyton Manning for this situation to make the throw, make the play. That was unbelievable. And then
I heard he checked out of the pass to run, but I don't believe that. I don't know if that's true or if I heard it correctly.
Not on 3rd and 7. That's crazy.
Well, there's no question that Baltimore was the best. I mean, look, I don't begrudge Baltimore winning that game. I really don't. I know they gave up the 2 touchdowns on the kick returns, and that's ridiculous. And it's unforgivable. If I'm your fan, when it happens to the Ravens, I'm laughing my ass off. But honest to God, I mean, you know, if that's my team, I'm like, my head's going to explode.
Yeah.
But okay. From Denver's point of view, if you're going to critique Denver, they get 2 gifts. Okay. You don't go to a game expecting to get 14 points off of anything, let alone, you know.
But don't forget about Baltimore's gift that, you know, Peyton's pick 6. Could have been pass interference. I mean, granted, I'm biased and I can't stand the Ravens, but I think the guy's arm was in there too soon. Listen,
we're going to the third dimension on this game, dude. I got lots more to say about this game.
In 3D.
I have to get this Denver critique off my chest because, I mean, this team, I had to hear, oh, they won 12 games in a row, and oh, don't forget what they did to the Steelers. Oh, I listened to just garbage all year long. And also I had to listen to my other NFL buddies telling me how wrong I was about the Denver. Denver's defense is something else. See, they carried Tebow last year. Oh, they got rid of Tebow, man. Now they're on a 12-game win. Well, you know what, dude? That defense sucked.
Who did they carry this year, or who did they carry in that last game? That
defense was.
They carried Joe Flacco. That's who they carried.
Yeah. Listen, I mean,
that defense was god awful, terrible yesterday, and Peyton Manning couldn't save them. And I don't know what the hell Peyton Manning was doing. I heard he had a great year, but I got to tell you something. That was no great game that he had. I don't know what that was.
He had.
And you know who did have a great game? I mean, I picked on Flacco enough. But who did have a great game was the Ravens receivers. Those guys made some spectacular catches.
Yeah.
I mean that was something to behold, man. Those guys went up for the ball, they adjusted for the ball. Every 50-50 ball that Forrest Gump put up, those guys came down with. And the ones that they didn't come down with, now I go to the third dimension. Are you ready on this game? Because there's no way you could talk about this game without talking about this next subject. Drum roll.
Wait, hold on. Before you talk about the rest, I know you're going to go on about the rest, so I don't want to just get my point in real quick.
And I got one more Flacco comment, if I may.
Okay, let me just talk about the coaching at the end of the game. Because there's 30 seconds to go at the end of regulation when the Broncos get the ball back and they have 2 or 3 timeouts. And they decide not to try.
About the 30-yard line.
Yeah, and they decided not to try, which I thought was crazy because you know, you have Peyton Manning. I mean, you're going up against a Raven defense that hasn't played well.
But I mean, this is what I figure. I mean, everyone's on them that they should have did try to get a field goal in that situation.
Yeah,
but it's like what happened with the Steelers against the Bengals. We tried to do something. We throw an interception. We give up one play and lose the game. We're out of the playoffs. So you're at home. You go to overtime, you figure you're going to get the ball because, I mean, you're thinking you're going to get the ball because if they come down and kick a field goal, at least you get the ball or whatever. You get the ball first, you score a touchdown, it's over. So I guess they like their chances in overtime. I can kind of see that.
It was just, you know, especially watching Matt Ryan have that exact situation and
I know, pulling it but off they had to do it
later. You know, yeah, it was frustrating. All right.
Okay, I want to say my Flacco comment because Joe just referenced – Joe, who do you reference him as? Who are you calling him? What's his name?
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Flacco Gump.
And when Forrest Gump throws a pass, it's just like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get.
Outstanding! Mike wins it! The best.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Outstanding.
Awesome.
You know, that just makes it even better, dude, because that totally fits. Outstanding. Oh, God.
All right. All right.
Did we get any fluck-ups in that game?
Flack-ups.
Flack-ups?
Keep it PG-13.
Didn't he have a fumbled snap?
He had a fumble snap.
I mean, they gave the game to Denver. That Denver couldn't win that game at home. Come on, man.
Yeah. I know.
So then finally the officiating in the game. I mean, this is one of the worst officiated games. And I'm not even going to blame the officials, really.
You really can't in this game.
The garbage with the postseason, and they're not going to. You know, like, I guess everybody knows, right, that the NFL officials, they're teams of them, right? They work together. They travel together, and they go to the games. They call the same, you know, side judge and umpire and, you know, top dog, et cetera, right? Okay, for the playoffs, what do they do for the playoffs? They have, like, a Pro Bowl team put together, you know? So you get the Pro Bowl refs, right, calling the game. They never ref together before. And now they're going to work together. And that game was a hodgepodge. It really was. They weren't calling it tight. They weren't letting them play. They were totally inconsistent from one play to the next play.
Are you saying that they weren't a team? That this was a Pro Bowl team?
It was a Pro Bowl.
Yeah, these are Pro Bowl teams now.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Am I wrong on this? I think the crews move on.
Whoever called that game, the Tom, Dick, and Harry in the booth there, they talked about that.
I think they talked about it. Yeah, I remember hearing them say. Yeah.
I always thought that the crew moved on.
No.
The whole crew.
It used to be that way.
Ah, okay.
They need to go back to that.
They need to go back, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, officiating is already, you know, for all, you know, I always beat up on the refs, and I you know, I get mad, especially when they make a bad call and they won't change. You know, that really upsets me. And that I put on the official because they could see with their own eyes. They could, you know, they made a bad call. Just fix it. But the rules themselves, the officiating is too difficult because there's too many rules and they're too subjective. And, you know, there's a lot of things to complain about. That's on the NFL.
I've never heard you say this before.
Rules committees.
Did any replacement refs make this all-star playoff crew?
I don't.
Judging from the officiating in the Ravens game, they would have been an improvement.
The Seahawks, on that last play, the Seahawks were hoping that the replacement refs were still out there.
And you know what I called for on that Seahawks Hail Mary pass?
Yeah, I got your text, yeah.
Yes, Mike.
I wanted simultaneous possession in the game.
That would be awesome.
That would have been a classic.
All right, let's talk about that game. Let's talk about Seattle and Arizona. Atlanta. That was another classic. I mean, two classic playoff games. Atlanta looked like in that game that they were, you know, they were the nobody believes in us one seed that, you know, everybody was afraid that they could be, and they came out ready. But then the Seahawks started to get some momentum. Then Atlanta started to choke, and then it looked like Atlanta, you know, it looked like a little Dennis Green action there, right? They are who we thought they were. In fact, if Dennis Green was the coach of the Seahawks, I'm pretty sure he would have had the exact same press conference over again. because man, that was a tough way to lose that game.
Did the Seahawks let him off the hook?
Yeah, the Seahawks let him off the hook. They all. That was a tough way to lose. You know, Seattle had him, man. I mean, they really had him. You know, they let him score too many points up the top, and they couldn't stop that running game early. But once Wilson got into to rhythm, and once he realized that the Falcons weren't bringing any rush, and when Abraham got hurt, that pass rush from Atlanta was completely gone, and he could basically sit back there. I mean, he could make a sandwich back there. You know, he could light up the grill and you know, make some hamburgers back there. I mean, there was no pressure on
him. He's great at buying time, though.
Yeah.
With his feet, he knows how to maneuver in the pocket.
I saw him watching Forrest Gump on his iPod in one of the plays.
So he, yeah, what's
but you guys are so down on Atlanta. I thought Atlanta, I mean, they're a solid team. And granted, I know that they won a lot of close games against bad teams, but it's playoff time now, and they have this chip on their shoulder that they never won a playoff game. You got Tony Gonzalez, who's been in the league forever and never won a playoff game. I saw them coming out and playing a good game and Seattle having trouble, you know, traveling back and forth so much. But they did give it up in the second half. But I still think they're a solid team. I mean, they have a good chance to make it to the Super Bowl.
Nah, you know what? They are who we thought they were. You know, the reason we don't like them, because I kept saying, of all the teams that are left, right? I mean, we get our hated Ravens, okay, or we get the hated Patriots. One of those two hated teams is going to the Super Bowl. Nothing we could do about that anymore. On the other side, we get the evil twin of Harbaugh, right? Or we get the Falcons. So of all of the teams, you know, the Falcons are really the most benign, right? You know, from a Steelers point.
Yeah, unless the Ravens make it to the Super Bowl, and then you have the worst case scenario for the Steelers.
The Harbaugh Super Bowl.
The Harbaugh.
Let me get the, because I there's one other observation as a Steeler fan. You know, the Ravens won that game. Okay, they advanced. They never should have beat the Broncos. You know, the odds were against them, and they went out there and they got this great win. And Flacco, you know, for making all these dumb decisions, comes out with a win and he looks like a big hero.
Yeah.
Right? So as a Steelers fan, you're looking, you're scratching your head and you're going, oh, what the hell's going on here? Oh my God. Don't be depressed. Don't be depressed.
No.
Because Flacco is Forrest Gump. And here's the thing. Now that he's done that, he's proved himself, okay? And he's going to be a Raven for a really long time. And that's good news for Steelers fans.
For a lot of money, too.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to lock in, man. They're going to lock in. He's going to be there till kingdom come, and the Steelers are going to be whipping his ass for many, many years to come.
Yeah, I agree.
That's so a little sunshine there.
The problem coming out this weekend is, we have these narratives now that say, like, well, Joe Flacco is a good quarterback, and Matt Ryan's a good quarterback. And Matt Ryan's like, you know, he made all the good throws at, you know, at the end that he needed to make. Like, what?
Matt
Ryan made a lot of awful throws down the stretch. In fact, his interceptions were what kept Seattle in the game and gave Seattle the momentum.
That is true, but that was coaching too. I mean, why are they running reverses? Why are you throwing the ball when you're up by – what were they up by?
They're up by 20. They're up by 20.
Well, but no, I mean late.
Oh, late. Yeah, they were up by 7 when they ran the reverse. They were up by 14 when they got the interception. It was really silly.
But come on, you got it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, so the Falcons, Mike, to answer your question, why are we upset with the Falcons? My whole thing with the Falcons is they're whiny little bitches. That's the problem.
Wow.
They have to, well, really, truly, come on. I mean, you want to know why people don't like
them. Why? Because they weren't getting respect?
Right, because they weren't getting respect, and they were whining about it. It's the same thing.
Who was whining?
I'm an elite quarterback, and you guys won't call me elite. It's a whiny little bitch.
But who was whining? The fan?
Play football, okay?
Matt Ryan's whining. Tony Gonzalez is whining.
He's out there going, "Hey, anybody want to recognize that I'm a great tight end here?" You know, come on, man.
I think
so. That's the problem. And you know what? So and our thing was, hey, you guys don't win. You don't win. You barely win. You kind of get lucky. The other teams get, you know, they get stupid, and you win because the other team does stupid things.
They won that game at the end because of Matt Ryan. Those two throws. I mean, you're down. You need to get in field goal range in 30 seconds, otherwise you lose. You can't afford an incomplete pass, basically. And he had two great throws.
So one time he delivered. They blew the biggest home field
score
advantage in the history of postseason.
Yeah, I don't put that loss solely on Matt Ryan. I think that was a total team. That was a total team give up. I mean, they almost.
I'm putting it on the Falcons, and that's why they're still, even though they came back like that at the end, the fact that they choked on a 20 point home lead in the postseason, okay, against a rookie quarterback, proves what everybody's been saying about them the whole year. You guys are not the real deal. Okay, so now they get the lead, which you choked, okay, and now you come back 30 seconds. Oh, you won the game. They choked. So what? So you're both chokers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the thing.
That doesn't prove anything about the Atlanta Falcons other than they can always be beat no matter where they're playing or what the score is.
The other thing about that game, the end of that game was, and I understand why Pete Carroll did this, but, you know, to go to that zone, that coverage at the end, didn't really make a lot of sense to me, especially when they were having a lot of success playing those guys man-to-man. I understand that you don't want to give up a big play, and that Atlanta team is built around the big play, and you saw what happened the day before with Flacco. But they left those guys too open.
He said – I heard him on the radio. He said that they did their best two blitz plays on those two plays.
I see. Yeah.
But I don't know if that meant zone or man. Maybe it was still zone, even though they blitz. He said those are the most two successful blitz plays that they had against Atlanta during that game. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did.
Yeah. Well, it was some pretty entertaining playoff football.
You know, by Atlanta winning that game, it ruined my joke. Because my joke was, what is the most choked on seed this past weekend in the United States? Was it the apple seed, sesame seed, watermelon seed? What was it?
The number one seed.
Number one seed?
There you go.
That's funny. That was on the podcast. That's amazing. So, all right. So going into
got a peanut gallery over here.
Yeah, right. So going into the final week before the Super Bowl here, the championship Sunday, I guess we should do our picks. A couple of intriguing games. 49ers at Falcons, Ravens at Patriots. I mean, these are good matchups. I'm excited to watch these games, but you know, I no longer have a rooting interest anymore. My picks this week, I went 1-3 on picks. It was a bad week for me. If I had to predict the Super Bowl, I guess I'm gonna go 49ers versus the Patriots is probably gonna end up being the Super Bowl. Although I wouldn't be surprised to see the 49ers and the Ravens be the Super Bowl. It does have that feeling of being, you know, the Ray Lewis, you know, retirement playoff type thing, like the Bettis type run that that the Steelers made in 2005 when Bettis was retiring, and now here we are watching Ray Lewis basically do the same thing. Wouldn't be surprising to me.
I'm going to agree with you in that that's who I see going is New England and San Francisco. And I think it would be and San Francisco winning. Defense beating the Patriots again, where the Patriots can't, you know, beat the Giants defense. So that'd kind of be nice to see the Patriots lose another Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's fun.
So as a Steeler fan, there is one combination left here that you can root for, and it's tough because the Patriots play the Ravens, and we can't stand either team. But you know, we dislike the Ravens more. So to see the Ravens lose the AFC Championship game in a way where a touchdown pass in, you know, a catch in the end zone that they have that they end up getting knocked out of his hands and then they miss a tying field goal. if they could lose in any way like that or even better, you know, if they can one up that, that would be a nice way to see them go home, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that we Steeler fans can root for. And then we also don't want to see San Francisco win because as a Steeler fan, I like to protect our 6 Super Bowls, you know, the only team to win 6 championships. So you don't want San Francisco. They have 5. You really don't want New England to get their 4th, right?
Right.
And you just don't want the Ravens to win. So so basically, you're going to root for the Falcons to make the Super Bowl.
No, you know why I can't cheer for the Falcons is because I don't know what it says about the NFL if a team like the Falcons can win the Super Bowl.
What, that whiny bitches can win the Super Bowl?
Yes, right.
Well, then was their whining justified if they proved they were the best team?
I guess it would be, right? There's no way Atlanta.
Yeah, you can't validate whiny bitches.
I also don't like the idea that they traded away basically their whole draft for a wide receiver. Like they, you know, like the loading up on offense types. I mean, first of all, that just doesn't work, right? I mean, we've seen that time and time again. That doesn't work. You don't win Super Bowls loading up on offense. They're gonna lose to San Francisco this week. So that's why I don't want that to be the trend in the NFL. I don't want that to become a thing. I like good defense. I like watching good defense. I want good defense to be rewarded year in and year out, and it has been in large part. So that's why I'm gonna go for. I'll probably if I have to watch a team win the Super Bowl, I guess I wouldn't be. I guess the 49ers are the one team. I guess I wouldn't really care.
I don't want them to get the 6th Super Bowl, but I like the defense. I like seeing a team with a good defense win the Super Bowl. And then Kaepernick, I mean, it would be exciting if he were like the MVP and had a game like he just had against Green Bay. I mean, that was an exciting game to watch one guy play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Joe?
Joe, your predictions?
Well, I mean, I agree with you guys. The most likely Super Bowl is San Francisco versus New England. But given what we've seen, man, you're going to get any of these combinations. So I don't have a horse in the race. I'm really not cheering for any team. It really doesn't make any difference to me who wins the Super Bowl at this point.
You don't care if Baltimore wins?
I guess that's the team I would like least to win the Super Bowl. But even if they did win it, I mean, it's just.
Oh no, that would really bother me.
I guess it would suck in that the whole, you know, the Ray Lewis Super Bowl run thing.
Yeah.
Would never, you know, they'd never shut up about it.
Yeah.
So that would be annoying. I guess I suppose the least annoying Super Bowl.
Also, the Flacco Elite thing would be really annoying too.
Yeah, but he would. Well, it doesn't matter how many times they say it. Okay.
Well, if he wins a Super Bowl, man, I mean that's it.
He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's it. He won a Super Bowl.
Can't ever take.
I can't watch Flacco win a Super Bowl. No, I can't do it because then he is a good quarterback. You can't win a Super Bowl and then be like, well, you're not a good quarterback though. Like, yeah, you are. You won a Super Bowl.
Excuse me, Phil Simms, still not a good quarterback.
Yeah, Phil Simms was a good quarterback.
He played a good game. Trent Dilfer and what's his name?
Brad Johnson.
You can put them.
Still though, those guys weren't bad quarterbacks. They were just okay.
Yeah.
Jim McMahon, not a good quarterback.
All right, but that's like, you know, that's greatest defense of all time type stuff. Terry Bradshaw, also not.
What about Jeff Hostetler?
Oh, Jeff Hostetler's good. You know, I had a friend in elementary school. His name was Jeff Hostetler. Really weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Anything else we got this week? Any other news? Oh, actually, yes, I do want to talk about something. This report just came out while we were doing the podcast. I don't know why I didn't bring it up earlier. This is from Steeler Depot, reporting from Jerry Dulock of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, saying that Todd Haley told the Cardinals that it's going to cost them a lot for him to leave the Steelers. Basically telling Arizona, look, if you want me to be your coach, I'll do it, but you're going to have to pay me a lot of money because I just built a house in Pittsburgh. I like it here. I want to return. They want me back.
That sounds really good.
That's reassuring, right? I mean, that
sounds really good. Yeah, because that means he thinks that whatever the problem was, it can be overcome.
It can be overcome, yeah.
Yeah, and he feels confident that it can. And he feels like he's going to have a long career in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not shopping for a head coach job. He wants to be the offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's a really good thing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is good.
Yeah. All right, so that's it. That's going to do it for Steeler Country this week. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, steelercountry@gmail.com. is the email address, the Twitter, twitter.com/SteelerCountry, and the website, steelercountry.net. Next week, we'll be back to talk more about the playoffs. We'll dive more into Steeler news, you know, what ends up happening with the Todd Haley thing. By next week, all the head coach jobs should start filling up. So we start talking about that. And then as we prepare for the combine, the draft, all the free agency moves, we got a lot to talk about. So see you next week.